Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Survivor.
21 South Africans. 12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million
shkeli. Aldi. Million. Rubli.
Tribe.
Scheibe Tortelle.
Ship.
Hello everyone and welcome to RJP's coverage for Survivor 42 for Survivor Global. I'm your host, Shannon Gus, and I'm here to talk about the premiere. We have a whole new cast, we've got Australian Survivor happening a couple of nights a week, and now it's just more Survivor in our life. So to talk about it, I have to get such an amazing first guest, someone I always love to talk to, someone I do get to speak to in an official capacity, and even, you know, more than that, but in an official capacity every week as my co-panelist on Talking Tribal, and she is the reigning queen of Australian Survivor. Please welcome the great Hayley Leake. Hayley, thank you for being here.
Hey, Shannon. It's super exciting to be here. I feel like Survivor hasn't stopped and taken a breath yet. Like, it just rolls on and on. But as always, I'm so excited to see a new season of American Survivor, the original best. And I'm so excited to talk about it today.
Oh my God, how different are Australian Survivor and US Survivor, especially like at this point in where we are in Survivor. Like, I feel that Australian Survivor is at its most dramatic, it's most drawn out. Like, especially this season has been like a little dark and complex, and like those are the vibes, especially with like the psychological layers of Blood versus Water. Cut to like where we are in the new era of US Survivor, and it's at like its most gimmicky. There's fake blood, there's more blood than somehow Blood versus Water, which would be like, instead it's red. It's like, it seems like bright, it's so fast. Tribal Council was 7 minutes. It takes 7 minutes just to vote in Australian Survivor. Like, especially just watching them side by side, like, my God, is it stark.
It is so different. Yeah, it's so, it does feel like American Survivor is like the light, you know, it is this bright light right now. It is so short, which is so interesting. But like just this first episode of getting to know the characters and really spending that time getting to know their stories, that's quite an Australian Survivor thing to do, to kind of flash back to their home life. But I really like it. I really like being able to connect strongly so that I can barrack for people as we go further into the season.
Yeah, it's weird because that is taken from Australian Survivor, going back. Well, I mean, I think they used to do it like way back when US Survivor, but like going back into their home life and their photos, that's an Australian Survivor thing. But we've spoken about this season of Australian Survivor that they've gotten further and further away from the story of it all. And it'll be like, you know, I had a moment, Nick and I, on the podcast a few weeks ago where we were like, do we know anything about these people other than like their connection to their Blood versus Water loved ones? Whereas this episode, and that was maybe one of the biggest differences, it was story on story. Like, we know so much, even without like the preseason content that many of us consume. But just from watching the episode, it's like, here is why this matters to this person, you know, like for so many of them. And I know it was a double episode, but I found a lot of time for that. And that's a big tick for me. Like, for me, I love the strategy of it, and I want to break down the numbers, and I will, I'm sure, through the season. But getting those emotional stakes for me, that's what kind of like gives weight to the numbers and makes it all make sense.
Yeah, and it's a good time to do that right now in this first premiere episode, because like there's only so much gameplay that can happen in the fact that we don't have established relationships yet. So it's a nice space to let us get to know everyone, their motivations, their background, because like the social aspect of the game is so important. Sometimes it doesn't translate always to the screen. So giving us the chance to know things about people more, that helps the viewer understand the social aspect of the game more. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of Survivor right now, but it actually kind of helps that they're two such different products, because it feels a little different. Like, I tweeted this last week, but it's very true that I said to Peter, I'm like, I'm a little overwhelmed that my whole life right now was Australian Survivor. And he was like, maybe you should invest more in some of your other interests. And I was like US Survivor. And I know that I was not kidding. Yeah. I was not kidding, but actually that kind of gap and how different they are, like, it feels like two different things enough for me, and I guess in the context of my very insular life. So it's good.
I love that, like, the solution to being like, I feel like I have too much Survivor in my life is not less Survivor, it's a different variety Survivor. As well.
Exactly.
I love that.
I'm glad that you agree. But Hayley, since we spoke last on RHAP, a lot's been going on. You moved away. I moved to Sydney. A week later, you left Sydney. I'm trying not to take it personally. Like, tell the listeners what's been going on and how you are.
Yeah, no, I'm really good. Yes, as you said, I'm so sad we didn't get much time together in Sydney because we were like going to be living right near each other. But
yeah,
I've moved back to my hometown, Adelaide, which is in South Australia, which is great. Yeah, bought a house, which means I've spent the winnings from Survivor now. Yeah. I had to put it somewhere. And then, yeah, I think that's the main things that have happened in my life, which is pretty exciting.
So many things. So excited for you. Okay, but beyond like the differences between the franchises, what were your general thoughts on this episode? Like, where did it rank for you? Like, did you love it? Were you meh on it? Like, what did you feel about it?
So what I want from a premiere episode is to get excited for the season. I want to start feeling like there's people in the season that I want to barrack for, and it's setting itself up well. That's all I want. And yes, it totally delivered for that for me. I walked away thinking about some of the players, which I think is pretty good. It's like when you walk away from a movie and you remember it. And I thought about, like, if I was starting, which tribe would I like to start in? And the fact that I was kind of split between a couple tells me a bit about thinking that I really like these players. So I think it hit really well. Yeah, it was good to see a few tribal dynamics. There was a couple of twists in there of like advantages, which I think we've kind of come to expect. Pretty interesting that it was very similar to season 41, but different in many ways. It's like they threw in the same kinds of twists, but we got the total opposite response to them. Like the Savvy and Sweat, they chose the opposite of that. So yeah, I really liked seeing that. And so yeah, what did you think?
For me, it was an episode of two halves. I loved it out of the gate from the Matt, and there were so many funny Matt answers, and Jeff was kind of, you know, leaning into it. And the kind of that like self-referential thing, which Survivor does in the new era. I loved that. I was laughing out loud from then, even through the challenge, loving the cast from the get-go and through the whole thing. The cast, I think, is absolutely the highlight of the season for me at this point. A lot of great, you know, stories as we started to see. I really liked kind of the amulet being introduced in the way that it was. So that I loved, and I was like, I'm so excited for the season, which I still am. I was a little let down by the second half of the episode. We'll talk about it, but losing Zach, I was really upset about personally. Big character that I, you know, loved and wanted to watch. The Jackson thing brought me down as well. I will talk about it, but I was not high on recycling all the twists. And by the time we were going back to Schiphol Island, I was like, I cannot do this again. I don't want to go back to Schiphol Island. No, you can't make me. So that, like, for a while it was kind of working for me. And then I was like, this is a lot. And it felt lazy, which we'll talk about. And then, this has been kind of on Twitter, and I know not everyone like succumbed to it, but they showed in the first 43 seconds, well, at least they suggested that Tori would find the Beware Advantage. You didn't see it in her hand, but that's a suggestion. When I've only seen it once, I'm not psychoanalyzing if she actually found it. I'm thinking she's one of two targets and she's not going home, and she didn't go home. So either I was actually spoiled by the show because she finds it, or I was manipulated into being spoiled by the suggestion, and that really, really irritated me. I came out of the episode like with such a sour taste in my mouth that, like, A, that Zach had gone and I was upset about it, but, like, B, that I knew he was going the whole time because I felt that I had been spoiled by the show. And you know how hard it is not to be spoiled, you know, in Australia. I have to get off Twitter, yeah. I have to, like, actually get some work done, get off social media, and then for the show to spoil me in and of itself, I just came out irritated. So I felt like I was on a bit of a journey through the episode.
I didn't even pick that up. So when I saw that you'd mentioned that, why did it spoil me before the edit? Why'd the edit spoil? I was like, what are you talking about? It took me ages to realize, oh no, of course. Like, I heard her saying the potatoes got the skin or whatever it was, and overlaying it with her face. So I'm not sure if she finds it, as you say, but yeah, damn, quite annoying that the editors have done that. It seems like such a simple thing to have. Couldn't they just show someone from,
or nothing? Like, show nothing.
Why show anyone?
What did we gain from that edit? What, like, from the suggestion? What did we gain? Because I was watching with my brother, my husband, and my best friend, and we're all kind of the same overthinkers. So one of us would forget it, but then someone else would be like, "Wait, why did?" Like, firstly, we were all like, "Wait, why are we seeing this at all? Like, why are we getting a suggestion? Why are we even seeing hands on a parchment? That for me is too far." And then we'd be in the challenge, and I'd be like, "But wait, we didn't see Tori yet." And then they'd be, "Oh yeah," we go to tribal. It's like, wait, but what about Tori? And we'd, like, all keep spoiling each other, which was bad because we were, like, it stuck in our mind. And I know it wasn't true for everyone, but should the detail-oriented people be punished like this? So, like, should we be punished for paying attention to, like, Or maybe we should be punished for reading into something that's not going to happen. She won't fight it. Either way, why suggest it? They gain nothing, and it wasn't just us. Like, they spoiled, it seemed, several people and, like, took away from that experience. And just why? Like, why should, yeah. Does the show hate? Like, it's my whole life. I don't know why.
Anyways, if we have to actually speculate about why, I would suspect.
Because they wanted that phrase, I would say.
I think the phrases came off quite well last season. People enjoyed them, yeah. The comedy of it and the humor of it. And so I think that they would want to tease that is coming again, and it's new phrases.
And they need a voice.
So that if you want to print it on a shirt, you can start getting it ready.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they sell those shirts, as we found out in the draft. Like, they can get your shirt. We've already introduced it. We're going to spoil some people with it. And they had to kind of suggest it, which... I could say they'd find another way, but they wouldn't care to find another way because they're like, no one will notice this, but they're wrong. Every time they think someone won't notice it, someone in the Survivor fan community will. Anyway, it was irritating. There's no point going on that much more about it. Let's talk about these production decisions, because I feel like, you know, we're going to get into the cast and the plays, because as I said, I feel the cast is the headline. And in saying that, let's start with production, because I want to talk it through, because we seem to have a bit of a different opinion on the recycled twist. Like, what did you like about it coming back from 41?
I wanted to have a go at the puzzle. Like, I wanted to know if they could get those triangles. So I didn't mind that they put that back in. They've clearly done it in a way that forces you to choose it. I think they would have felt like it was a fail if everyone chose the bucket and ran. Therefore, they altered it slightly in that one person had the bucket, which really disincentivizes you from wanting to choose that. And you get two guesses at the puzzle. So, like, clearly you're going to choose the puzzle. I was happy to see the puzzle play out. I thought there was some nice humor in the way people were trying to figure that out. Like, when old Baines of Jonathan was like,
Eleven.
Like
a baby
court. Oh, so good.
That was the funniest moment.
Get to know each other. So funny. Like, what, 40 minutes later, I've got 11.
No, I tweeted this, like, the look on his face when Owen was like, I'm up to 36, and he's like, what? And, like, it was 51. He was 40 short, Jonathan. Like, Jonathan actually came up better than I thought, but Jonathan, one-fifth of the triangles were found. Oh, you gotta love it.
I gotta love it. Yeah, I thought that was fun. So I enjoyed that. I enjoyed watching it. Shipwreck Island, I'm not sure. I guess I would know from a production point of view, they don't know how well these twists have landed yet, because they're filming these literally back to back and they haven't seen an audience response to the twists already. So I guess they were just giving it another shot because they would hope. Maybe they were celebrated and then everybody loves Shipwreck Island and they've been like desperate to get it back. And so it's a chance of these like cross tribal bonds.
Yeah. Like, just in case everyone like was obsessed with this. That's why I'm so glad that the 41 cast gave a lot of feedback on the island about something like the hourglass. It was like, it was a good control room, I think, for them to be like, maybe that won't be received well. For me, it's just really odd that the theme of 42 is that it's a sequel to 41. Like, how tied up these seasons are in each other is strange to me for a few reasons. One being, he's like, they haven't seen it. It's like, okay, but that's like not a new or novel thing. Like, that's true of like every filming cycle. So why are we doing it now? The second thing, he's like, okay, we're gonna do it because they haven't seen it. It's like, but we've seen it. And there's so many of us. There's like 10 million of us and there's only 18 of them. Like, we're all throwing a surprise party for this cast that we're all in on, but we already did it.
They need us to know that they haven't seen it, because otherwise we would, because of those calling out the butterflies are like my dead relatives. Mm-hmm. Otherwise we would be asking, shouldn't they know they've seen the last season? So I think they just need the audience to know quite clearly that this is a naive group of players.
Yes, and I understand that they're giving that context, but like, these twists weren't great enough to like do an entire new season around the fact that we're redoing it. I'm okay with some of it. The sweat and savvy stuff, I mean, you've outlined the differences. To me, we can talk about, it's players kind of, you know, becoming different manifestations with the twist, and that's what's so fun, is seeing like how these players kind of make it more dynamic. And I think that's true of some things. I don't believe that to be true of sweat and savvy. Like, I don't think like, wow, they chose savvy and last year they chose sweat, but those decisions became so different for me. Like, it's not a tiny tweak, like one person versus two, that's a completely different decision to make. So I didn't mind that, and when we'll talk about that decision. It's just like for Shipwreck Island, for me as an analyst, like I think going back to when I did the premiere with Dino last season, it was like, all right, what I enjoy doing is we got into the debate and we worked out some of the game theory. We worked out it's different to a prisoner's dilemma and this is why it matters. It's because it makes collaborating like a more attractive option, and like there's a social out that a prisoner's dilemma doesn't give. That's what I kind of love doing. And we'll talk about it with the amulet, like how they could have gamed that and what people should do with that. And I'm sure we'll continue to talk about it with. But I think that while we may do that with these twists and while people will use it differently, neutering that from an analytical point of view for me is not really what I love about the show. Like, I'd rather give me some new fun thing like the amulet that's in the theme of this like wacky show that we're at. But the exact same thing that we've already analyzed what the optimal strategy is, for me, like, why?
Yeah, I see that. I wonder if they felt like they had some nice moments where relationships were able to be formed before merge. Like, I think quite strongly of Liana and Shan's moment when they were climbing, and like maybe they just thought that was such a beautiful moment, and that to have those connections would be quite influential at merge, and that it was a successful twist from last time.
Yes, but my concern with that, and if this kind of theme of this episode continues, is that with those moments like Shan and Liana, I'm worried that they're going to yada yada some of it, because we've seen it already in 41. And I noticed them doing it in this episode, like how they didn't come back and explain where they'd been in Schiphol Island, because we've had JD's story, like we've had that dynamic. We didn't even see them interact on Schiphol Island. We actually got no like strategic dynamics really out of that whole journey, other than kind of understanding more about those three players and kind of their game styles, and knowing now that there are like two extra votes in the game. So even things like Sweat and Savvy, so we see one tribe make that decision. We see that Mike is like, I thought, really well, doing very well on that, of why he doesn't want to do the sweat thing, and he knows it'll all be on him, and very softly being like, no. But we didn't get to see the other tribe make that decision. It just cut to them, and it was a funny cut. But I wonder if we, you know, having watched three instead of one tribe make that decision, makes them yada yada, and I want to see why. Like, does Jonathan do something similar, or does he kind of, seems like he wants to be the provider, so does he offer it and then they kind of shut him down? We didn't actually see that decision get made, so I'm wondering if they'll kind of montage over what we know to be when these dynamics are now imported in and of themselves, and we actually need to see it all 100% again. But because we've seen it already, I think they just might deliver it to us differently.
Yeah, they are packing so much into these episodes. Like, every time you put a twist in, it's not as simple as an advantage. It's not as simple as that. Like, you have to explain the mechanics to everyone, show how it was all laid out. And so in this initial episode, we see like three of them put in from the very first challenge to Schiphol Island to the amulets, as well as getting to know every player, managing Jackson, getting taken out of the game, and then one elimination. It's a lot to pack in, and to put that all in, they have to sacrifice something. And I wonder if there would be more benefit to putting less advantages in at the start and getting us to understand better the full mechanics of why people are making the choices they're making.
Yeah, well, I think so. From a time perspective, I just think, like, you know, less on the advantages has always been more, especially because the fact that they're willing to redo most of the advantages shows that they know that the advantages aren't the draw card. Like, the cast is the draw card, and Jeff has said that before. But for him, it's like, okay, well, then how will the cast react to the advantages? For me, I've always said, like, if you're aware the cast is the draw card, it shouldn't be like, how do they kind of interact with these gimmicks, which I still think are like, the gimmicks will overwhelm them. Like, we still have to spend some time on that. It still affects all the dynamics. We still know a lot of these people through the prisms of advantages. So it's, you can't either, you can take away as much time from it as you want, or be like, well, we've seen it, so it's kind of less, but it's in the dynamics out there, it's just as much. So I think if you know the cast leads it, just like, do a little bit less and just let those dynamics play out. But anyway, I feel like those were a couple of just like critiques that I had. I want to talk about something positive that you touched on, and that is the amulet, which is the new twist, because I thought this was really interesting. Like, what did you think of this advantage?
I thought this was a great advantage. It's obviously, it adds so many layers in that it's not so much that they just have it, like they didn't really have to work to get it, they just found it in their challenge. So it's nice in a way that they have to work to work out how to use it, which is, do they collaborate or do they, what do they do? Like, but by the time they get to using it, it'll be interesting if some of them come together on a swap, because outline this for me. Do they have to, if there's three people left in the game still and there's a swap and two of them are together and one's not, can those two use combine theirs? No. So you have to, everyone left in the game who mm-hmm. has one has to be together. Yeah. Mm. Okay. Which makes it really interesting because like an extra vote isn't that fun. No. Like
as
three
we know.
People use together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's going to be a really big incentive if someone hasn't naturally been voted out for the others to go for someone to make it more powerful. Although, yeah, I obviously an idol is powerful, but a steal a vote can be quite powerful in itself. If you're at a point where you're maybe at merge and you need numbers, a steal a vote can be really powerful.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a little high on the extra vote after 41 in these small tribes. I think we saw it definitely mm-hmm. help a split, possibly put some pressure on, which was more than it had ever done before. But I think that I'm coming around on the amulet because basically what it is, and it's something we've spoken about with Jacques from Survivor South Africa, this is a bounty, right? This is a bounty twist where it's offering the idea of collaboration, but the collaboration is so difficult and for so much less that for me it was almost counterintuitive. I was like, this is not an even decision at all. And I was like working through my mind of like how you could make it more even, which may be a bit confusing, but basically you'd work down the same way where you could like kill off the other players and make it more and more powerful. Or it starts off as an extra vote when it's one of three. If it's like some sort of like hybrid, like two of three or one of two, it's a steal a vote. And then if you get three of three, like you've combined for an idol. So there's a way that you have this like kind of even pathway of collaborating or taking each other out. And I at first was going with that. But then I was like, that's not what they want. This is a hard bounty. Not so much so because I guess they've offered the promise of collaboration that you can get something if you know, you can get an extra vote if the three of you combine. But that's so hard and so small. Like such a small reward for a difficult thing of all combining that it's actually what I feel is like a false promise of collaborating mm-hmm. and is an actually a bounty with no real choice. And I think that I'm actually like, I've come around on the fact that that's pretty fun. Not to like just put them into one decision where you have to do the bounty and there's no way to collaborate, not to kind of give them an even choice, but to be like, yeah, you can work together, I guess, but like how much more attractive is it to take each other out? And I've come around on it because a bounty twist is something we've kind of always wanted to see. And they're basically forcing the players into doing that.
Yeah, I think that this, as you say, like, it's nice to have advantages in the game, but really the priority should be making sure you've got numbers and you have the right relationships. And if you're putting getting an advantage or a stronger advantage over the top of that, it's probably a bit worrying because that's like a one-trick pony. You really need to make sure you've got the right relationships. Yeah, I think I'm going to attempt to watch this play out because I'm at this stage not entirely clear on what choices they're going to have to be making.
Yeah, I think that people should put relationships over advantages, but I've said in like the short game, I actually see people not doing that and relationships will only get you so far. And actually like that safety, I mean, it didn't work out so great for Xander, but like it got him to the end and like that safety or the threat of that safety can get you, you know, if it gets you a week, you're over a quarter of the way through the game, you know, in these short games. And also, even if that wasn't optimal, people would still do it. You know, people would still choose to take each other out. It's like, oh, I could really work well with you, but I'm like now going to cut you because I could have this thing. And also the fact that they know that they're a mark on each other before they've been able to mm-hmm. bond at all because they've had one very rushed conversation and then poured fake blood on each other means that that's going to be a barrier to them connecting because they know that it's like... They're like, it's like a mm-hmm. cursed relationship. Like, you're not going to be like, Hyatt's not going to be like, oh, Dre, I really like her. I want to work with her. Like, she's his mark. So, they have now such a barrier to making connections. They have like an actual target on their back. For me, like, I'd want to give it away. Like, this is not a helpful advantage. This is a pure target.
Is it transferable? Can you give it away?
I'd be doing that. Honestly, we'll talk about them taking it, but like I would go to the mat if I could in a challenge. I'd find the one I trusted most of the three between Lindsay, High, and Dre. I'd be like, take it. Take this cursed mark because it's not like the odds of you getting to use it as an idol where you'd have to be the last one remaining. I mean, that feels like that's going to happen in a long time. I mean, I guess you could wait to do it before any type of swap because they can't get to you now. So you might as well have it. And it's like, well, if, you know, you're high, and Lindsay and Drea happen to be the first boots of their tribe. Well, now you just got it, and you didn't have to do anything. But, like, possibly if you get to a swap or whatever and you know that they could come for you, I might just pass it off at that point.
I wonder if you can give it to, you can give it to the person who's already got one. Yes, you can high give it to Drea and Lindsay.
For sure. I mean, anything can be transferred unless, but let's not talk about it.
I'd be fearful, though, because they're bound right now in secrecy together. Like, although information is power, if one of them lets this information out to another tribe member, they're also exposing themselves.
Mm.
So in a way, they're probably going to be able to keep this fairly secret because it's not in their advantage to tell other people about it, which is fun because sometimes these advantages get found out by everyone and then they kind of lose their power in some way. So I think that's a kind of fun thing about it, that they're tied together in secrecy. If High handed is off to Drea, then if I'm Drea, I'm like, yay, I've got two, but now you've got this information on me that you're probably going to tell everyone. Mm-hmm. Like,
now you're not part of the literal blood pact that we made.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where now you could be like a free agent that isn't.
And you're probably gunning for me because like the reason you're getting it off your back is because you don't want to be a target, but you see me as one.
Yeah. I mean, he now has nothing to gain by getting rid of her. Like they're targets to each other because they'll gain a trinket from it. But I do think you wait on it now. I think doing it in a challenge, that seems like overly... I think I can think of some people in Australian Survivor who might do it, but that seems like, overly generous. But I'd be waiting, seeing about a swap or a merge, because I wouldn't want to be taken out as a bounty. I would be fearful of that, and I would pass it off. And the thing is, like, if Drea is then, like, say High passes it to Drea, I mean, like, not taking into account, like, clear play styles, but if Drea is then, like, concerned about what a bounty that makes her, and the fact that then High has no reason not to tell everyone else, then she can give it all to Lindsay. Like, or she can pass it off to anyone else. Like, every person makes the decision of whether they want that mark or not. So, yeah.
I've just been waiting a little bit longer to see.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, just wait it out, like, a bit more. Who's going home? Will one of them just end up going home through circumstance of the pre-swap?
Yeah.
And then I think if I'm holding one of these, I want more information before I'm making any big decisions about what I do with it. So you're waiting for a swap to see who's left in the game.
That's so weird. Yeah, I mean, imagine seeing each other on the mat and just looking at each other and being like, we are all benefited by taking each other out. Like, this is so unfortunate. Like, I don't even know you and you're my primary target. Like, yeah, that's why it's a very, very fun mechanism, I feel. What did you think about the way that they found it? Like, so it's in the middle of the challenge, the first challenge. Like, the mud and blood stuff, with Harry Potter, I shouldn't even say a negative, bad word from Harry Potter. But it was a mud blood thing. And they're what foreshadowing for Tori? What did you think about the way that they found it?
Yeah, hilarious. Like, why not put it in challenge? Like, if you're going to suspect them, sure, they've been gone for a long time. But I just love that they left all the mud there for them to throw it on each other.
Right.
I thought Drea was really, because you need to cover. Like, they're not even going to be panting when they get back.
Well, we'll pant.
Not even gone very far.
I used to have a friend she used to, like, her mom would drop her off to go to the gym. And then she'd, like, go hang out in the mall. And then she'd, like, kind of, like, splash some water on her face, like, try and make it look like she'd, like, been at the gym. They could have done that.
Totally. That bowl of blood was so, like, I reckon that was there because the production wanted to know, like, as if they're actually going to use this, like, how hilarious. And then they did. Like, as if you would use the blood. Like, how do you cover that? Like, where is the blood coming from? Like, your nose?
My nose bled on the trail. Like, what on this beautiful Fijian beach is making them like? That's what I think. Like, I can see it in the outback, but, like, what in Fiji? It just looked, obviously it was traumatic. They obviously must have come up with some sort of cover story for it. And I actually appreciated that, like, though it was so stupid, like, obviously High is like, I'm on Survivor and it's having fun with it in the first 10 minutes. You can't blame that, even though then he immediately goes in the water. And then there's, like, no discernible cuts on him at all. So,
this really made me really love Lydia, though, with her calling him out, being like, the blood, where's your blood come from?
And I think she was worried about him. They're allies. Yeah, like, oh, my God. Like, but, I mean, look, they were saying, like, Daniel literally popped his whole shoulder out. Like, even if he was bleeding like that for real, they'd be like, that's, like, kind of nothing compared to what Daniel's going on the other mat.
Yeah, yeah. I did like Drea in this moment when her explanation for why they should take the take the amulet or whatever they knew at the time, the advantage. You know, we're here for 26 days. We're here to play. And as long as the three of us come to merge and we can work together, then that's great. So that was just some like nice quick thinking as a way to be like, yes, come on, let's take this.
I liked all of them in this moment. I felt like they all vocalized something I could really get behind. So like Drea has the short-term game thing, which we'll talk about Drea. Like she has her foot on the accelerator. Her game is probably too big even for 26 days. Like the way Drea is playing, she will win on like an 8-day game, but like we're not there yet. But I still like that she could vocalize that because it's true. I like that Hai was like, well, we'll connect the three of us, cue the bounty, but like it was a nice sentiment at the time. And Lindsay is like, well, they were being deceitful off the bat, which is again, not as big a deal for 26 days, but it's still very much a factor. And I like that socializing. She, you know, obviously we'll do it eventually and she's not going to like really push back against them. But I felt like they all kind of had a good point and they all kind of came to a conclusion and it could have been the genesis of something beautiful and now they're enemies. So yeah. But yeah. It was a fun time. I wanted to ask, okay, last thing on production. So yes, let's get in a little bit into the edit. Unprecedented, apparently, that everyone got two confessionals. I think the last three premieres, including this one, everyone got one confessional. No one technically ruled out as a winner from the edit in episode one, which is just a gift. You know, like on your first time, like the friends, like on your first episode when Spin Australian Survivor took someone to episode 13 to get a confessional. 13, there's such long episodes. 2 to 6 confessionals for every person, extremely even across the board. A lot of reasons to like care and connect about people, those backstories as we spoke about. It's a wild departure for me from what we've watched for the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like, I feel like I do know each of these cast members and something about them and I'm caring about them. I think it's an excellent way to edit the show. Like, if this is the benchmark for what we're going to be doing from going forward, that's great. Like, there's nothing less interesting for a viewer, and especially like a fan, to feel like you have to wipe out half the tribe already because they haven't gotten confessionals in the first few episodes, so they're clearly not going to win. You know, the editors can muck around with us and surprise us and still put the winner in without many confessionals at the start, but this is a way more enjoyable way to enjoy the season by having an even mix of confessionals.
I feel like the way that this has swung over the last few weeks is like peak fandom. Like there's so much hyperbole. Like before when like Sandra was on Blood versus Water and like there was so much excitement and everything was on Paramount Plus, like it was like US Survivor is terrible and Australian Survivor is the only good franchise and like everyone was watching it and it was like The Good Child. And then like it faltered a little bit, you know, like The Good Child does like the wrong thing. And then it was like, well, it's terrible and its edit is horrible. And it got taken on Paramount Plus. And now like US Survivor, look at its edit. And I feel like each swing is like, A, each swing is too heavy. And B, What Survivor South Africa, which is a true middle child that no one's paying attention to, that's actually doing everything right. But I find this funny. I mean, I'm sure US Survivor will do something within the next couple of weeks that'll be like, you know, somehow too gimmicky even for the new era, or like something else. It'll be like, but Australian Survivor. It's just funny for me watching like the fandom swing back and forth on this, where it's like, they're both good. They're both flawed. They all, like in the last few years, both have produced bad, good and middling seasons. That's where we're at.
There's something about having 18 players in sets of three that is just really easy for my mind to comprehend.
Yeah, agree.
Like, it doesn't mean that it's easy to play. Like, I try to think, there was 12 people when we started on the season, on the tribe, sorry. And so you can really hide when there's 12 people, which is kind of boring in some ways because it means gameplay doesn't have to ramp up too quickly for everybody. And you can people who hide in the edit a bit. But when there's 6 people, like there's not a whole lot of room to move, but it's really nice for a viewer to get an idea of who everyone is and what's motivating them.
Yeah, it's hard to forget people because they all are important in the dynamic pretty much. Like it's hard to leave anyone out of a dynamic of 6. So yeah, I mean, I like big tribes in Australian Survivor. From a TV perspective, I feel the pre-merge can often feel like two concurrent merges. I think that we've seen a bit of it on Australian Survivor. Like, we've seen the homogenous groups that can form when it's that big, but then we'll also see these like big shifts and like big moves, as you did, for example, like turning the whole tribe against Joey, which you know, it's harder to do in six because it's these smaller, like individual moves, individual relationships getting down to these like itty bitty tribes. So I think there's intrigue there. I do really like big tribes, but I think from a story perspective, it can be really good to have the small tribes. In saying that, when you go to 40 minutes, some of those tribes are going to, you know, get left out, especially if they're not going to tribal council. Like Luvu, for example, we're not going to see them as much, and we're going to be basing it on like the external islands as we were last season. So pros and cons for both, basically. Like, I want to be on the fence is what I'm saying. It's like each thing is an opposite thing. There's good and bad. I'm not going to be on either like massive side of this issue because I feel like the hyperbole is too strong. So that's why I sit on the fence and I'm like, yeah, I can see both ways.
I just realized like there's, so when, yeah, it's pretty obvious though, when there's three tribes, your chance of going to tribal is so much smaller.
I know.
Like six of 18 are going to go to, that's like one third of the people will go and two thirds will be safe. That's so nice. player.
Yeah. And that's why you can like never go. That's what we see in like Michelle, she went to tribal council pre-merge, Erica, because they have a better shot of it. And then obviously you start sitting people out. And as we talked about last season, like it starts kind of compounding itself at a point. Well, let's talk about some of these decisions within production. Then we're going to get to these amazing tribes. But we talked about Sweat and Savvy. You like seeing the triangles. Did you think it was the right decision to choose the triangles?
Absolutely. I feel like the decision to make the triangles was almost forced upon them by how unappealing it was to have a singular person run up and down the beach and exhaust themselves. I feel like that. And the fact that you got two guesses for the triangles, it made it way more appealing. You have 4 hours to look at these triangles and make a decision, and then everyone can work on it. I thought that was a really sensible decision. Obviously, the tribes both did that. The one person, it's interesting to see Mike really argue his way into not doing the bucket because he's the strongest person to do it. For sure. Yeah. Mm. Like, easy choice.
Yeah, I think that having the pair, for better or worse, last season made people think that the isolation wouldn't be as big a deal, or made people, like, for example, I know, like, Xander really wanted to do it and Voce didn't. If it had just been on Xander, maybe, you know, maybe he doesn't want to, but also he doesn't drag Voce into a decision he doesn't want to make. Just kind of let one person stand up, and I thought Mike had a really good approach to it without being like, I'm not doing it, I'm not helping. He was like, we should all kind of share responsibility for this, and no one could kind of blame him for that. But then also, there was actual merit to the fact that, like, it wasn't so terrible being isolated as a two. It was for Voce, but Danny and Deshaun make, like, a all-game relationship on that first day. There's also merit there. I think, like, the extreme obvious lack of merit means that it's easier for someone to stand up and say no, because there's, like, there's actually nothing good there, which there was if you played it right last season. So, yeah, they definitely wanted the triangles to come out. They're like, we printed off this thing. Do you know how hard it is to get a printer, like, this big in Fiji? We will be using the triangles. And I thought this was like also great television. Like, first of all, we talked about the Jonathan moment. Somehow Jenny just saying, this is a triangle. This is a triangle. People killed me.
Yeah. Yeah. It was such a nice way to figure out who's good at puzzles and who's not. I'm just thinking as well, like, Mike was the one who's like, I'm clearly going to be the one who would have to do the bucket if we do that, because I'm clearly the strongest in this tribe.
Yeah.
Which is not wrong. Like, he's a retired firefighter. He's a strong guy. He's 58.
I know, like, but he's like so strong compared to everyone.
And he's so much older than the rest of his tribe. He's 10 years older than the second oldest person, who would have been Jackson. Yeah, and I just love that he's clearly the strongest person, but also by far the oldest person out there.
Yeah.
Good moments in the triangles. Yeah, yeah. Like, definitely the highlight was Jonathan telling us that there's 11 triangles by his count. So funny.
Look, I said that they should have done triangles last season when it wasn't, like, overpowered in triangles' favor. So I think that decision speaks for itself. Let's talk about going to Shipwheel Island, because we got a bit on these players, Marianne, Drea, and Jenny going. Jenny had a lot to do with kind of these decisions and these mechanisms. This to me was the most interesting manifestation of, okay, the cast will change the twist. for me, just choosing who to go, because through different means to get three women going out. We had three men last season, which is typical. I feel like we kind of get these, like, and they ended up being those players, JD, Vanda, Danny. They were like forward players, leadership type players. Like, it makes so much sense that, like, for different reasons, they kind of ended up going. And I feel like what I was sensing a lot preseason from this cast was like, this is like a lot of strong forward women. They kind of all go for different reasons, but I think it might speak to a bit of the dynamic that we might see in these women taking on leadership roles, which is much more atypical than what we usually see of three men.
Yeah, so three women going to Shipwheel Island. I guess it did feel like the only person who put their hand forward seemed to me to be Marianne. Like, so excitable. I love how she's like, I wouldn't not want to go. Like, as in, you can totally send me. And everyone else is just looking for anyone to put their hand up to step out into the limelight. We know for sure someone like Lindsay is not going to want to do it, because she's already said she can see that, you know, you don't want to be suspicious from the start. She's always been already been afraid of that. So, yeah, I can see, yeah, Marianne did it for that reason. They picked short straws for Jenny. So that was, that was just random. And then for Ayaka, so Drea, we saw Drea doing scissors, paper, rock, not rock, paper, scissors, scissors, paper, rock, okay. From your perspective, I kind of assumed then that the whole tribe had been doing scissors, paper, rock, and they were the last two to try to figure out who it was that would go.
I think for Drea, the fact that she won scissors, paper, rock, like for me, if they all did it, I would be like, the losers, you know, like the losers get, like, that's basically like a short straw thing. Like, they get lumped with it. She and Roxroy, who are the final two, or the only two that did scissors, paper, rock, obviously wanted to actually be there. Like, they won the right to go to Shipwheel Island, which some people would not want that reward. That made me feel like, okay, I could actually see this just being Drea and Roxroy based on what I know of Drea and Roxroy. Like, definitely Drea, as like, we've understood. Like, they might be the only two
who, like, up to want to do it.
Yeah, like, I don't know that there's so many other people in the tribe. I don't think, like, necessarily Zach would. I can't really see Swathi doing it. Tori, I mean, Tori was doing a lot. Maybe she kind of wanted to hide a little bit. Romeo is very well insulated. Like, if I was to choose two people who I thought were, like, we'll do it, we'll scissors, paper, rock for this, like, we're fighting over this prize that, like, most other people don't want, I actually would see it as them too. So I wouldn't be surprised if they just did that one round of scissors, paper, rock. Rock, paper, scissors? I don't know. People always get annoyed. I don't know which one it is.
I would be really interested to know that eventually, if they were both putting their hand up to do it, because that's a ballsy thing to do.
But have you met them? Have you met Roxroy and Drea? Like, that's what, that's like the most subtle thing either of them did this entire week, was put up their hand to go to Shipwheel Island.
That is scary, because annoying as well. Like, Drea obviously has come out of this with two advantages, which seems really epic, but neither of those you could get without having a little bit of suspicion. Like, you're not hiding in the background when you're taking a while to come back from a challenge, and, you know, they knew that they'd been gone for a while. And then obviously going off to some random thing, which probably comes back to an advantage. It's a dangerous way to play so fast from the start. Like, I know the feeling of wanting to. Like, it's really exciting that you're out there and you want to do something. But yeah, that's like, that is not hiding in the shadows at all.
That's what I'm saying, is like, Drea just won like an LRG, like a 2-day camp out for one night Survivor. I think her game is too big even for 26 days. I think she's a 1-week player. Like, she came out of this episode with two advantages, but also a bounty, but also she didn't even know if she had her vote, but also suspicion, but also like some possible fear that, like, Zach was talking about in the exit. Like, Drea came out with a lot. Like, she's absolutely here to play. And again, it's cool to see that coming from a woman. Because again, like, the type is often like a Garrett Adelstein, for example. But I think that the way that they turned the wheel, again, they just really, really wanted to use these props, but the way that they turned the wheel, I think, speaks to the way that they got on the island in the first place. Like, the fact that, like, again, we know Drea, of course, she's going to fight. So there's a big rock people out there to get there, and then she's going to risk it. Like, then she's going to play. Marianne puts her hand up, like, of course you're going to play. Like, you're the kind of player who volunteers to be there. Like, it's not put on you. It's not a short straw drawn. Then, like, yeah, you're probably going to, like, be even more active and step into it. Whereas, like, for Jenny to draw the short straw, she doesn't necessarily want to be there. She doesn't want to be necessarily playing, like, the most active game. But she's been put in these roles where I thought she, like, beautifully led the triangle thing and hilariously. And she got put in this position. And then I think she did great with it. Because as was analyzed last year, I would choose to protect. And I think there's a lot of good stuff that comes out of that. Even the fact, as we said last season, but we saw it play out, where Drea is like, I can't push the Roxroy vote because I don't even know that I have a vote. And she's won in that game. she won the game and she still lost out on social capital and on some power here just by not knowing if she had a vote until she got to the voting booth. And that was a big red flag for me last season. So Jenny's in the Danny spot here where she has to go and then she takes the out and she protects and it's very stable. And I understand Marianne and Drea pushing hard in a 26-day game, but I still lean to Jenny's way of thinking.
Yeah, especially this early. And, you know, Jenny had that hike to get to know the other two women. And, you know, they're both coming across to us as really extroverted, you know, gregarious people, which is exciting. But she read it very well. Like those two women, like I wouldn't put it past them to both want to risk their vote. They're so like very smart read. And if Jenny's got good reads on people, then that's a really, really good skill in a game like this. And like, as you said, like to play a bit more safely and conservatively at the start, can be quite good. Although I feel like in season 41, we kind of saw that I can like advantages and known advantages or suspicion of them can protect you. People feel like maybe you've got something or you do know that you've got an idol, like then they don't go for you, especially when there's such small numbers like this. So yeah, we'll see how that plays out.
I feel like for Marianne and Drea, the way that they're playing and the way they've come out of this episode is like they stand out and those decisions mean that for them. Like Jackson said that Marianne was like already kind of threatening for like obviously how likable she is, and then she like so she kind of probably needs trinkets to protect against that. She's already standing out, but then she goes to the island, now she stands out more. Same with Drea. Like Zach in the exit was saying that Drea you know had a target on her, but then you know you want to target her because she did put her hand up for that, but then you're also scared that she has an extra vote or an idol like at the small little tribe of six. So they're both kind of pushing with fear, with power, with suspicion. Their feelings about them that can be positive and negative, but their extreme feelings about these people. Whereas I feel like Jenny, when put into these big external situations, actually came out really, really even, did as much as she could. And again, it speaks to who you are as a person. Jenny, Marianne, and Drea are not the same players. You have to be who you're going to be. But I think for Drea and Marianne, they come out with something. You know, Drea also has the amulet. They come out with lots of thoughts and feelings about them in every direction that can help and hinder. And Jenny comes out just, you know, straight on. And I like that. And I think it works well for Jenny. I was very impressed with Jenny in this episode.
I talk to me a little bit about Drea risks her vote. Yes. So she goes to the tribal. Nobody knows that she's risked it. They assume everyone has a vote. There's six people going to tribal. How dangerous is that for her not to have a vote? Because in my mind, like we see that it turns out that it was going to be a 5-1 with Zach is playing the dark. So if she doesn't have one, that's okay. It's a 4-1. And if she's in the one position, there's not much she can do anyway. Then otherwise you think it's likely going to be like, what, like a 4-2? It's pretty unlikely it's going to be a 3-3 when everyone assumes that everyone's got a vote. And if it is a 4-2 and she doesn't have a vote and she's in the majority, doesn't matter. And if she's in the minority, wouldn't matter anyway. So like, is it really that risky?
Yes. Again, like as I feel like I'm having deja vu from like, I can't tell you how much time my brain has spent on Schiphol Island. Now it's actually good. It's good to use Schiphol Island. Like if I have my brain, like just really make use of that space. Like just like they're reusing the props. I'm like, here's my thoughts about this. I actually went back to read my notes to be like, I know this was good, but why? No, I think that it means that if you are in a 4-2, which often, you know, you see like the pairs on some of the tribes come out, like it means you can't split the vote. And you have to tell people why. It means that you can't have the power to push a vote because you might not have a vote. So to lead something and then not even be able to support it, which we see with Drea, that's really dangerous.
Do you feel like splitting, like on at the very start, you want to do a 4-2?
Yeah, they have before. They have in these three.
They often split.
Yeah, they feel like because the 2-2-2 is so like easy and obvious.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's just always scary when it's like, let's do 4-2. You have to really trust that those people you've never voted with before are actually like to split the vote when you've never seen anyone lay a vote down and you can't trust anything they've said yet. Like that's good.
Like last season, I am passionately, should I just edit in parts of last season's podcast? Like last season, I passionately defended that your first vote is more important than your subsequent votes. Like setting up that, like initiating that who you're going to be, who you're going to work with is more important than the subsequent votes. And like the possibility of losing that and even not knowing if you have it is to me too big a loss to get an extra vote for like later in the game. And I also think, like, look at Ika. Freaking madness. Like, I know it ends up being, like, the first ever, like, pure unanimous vote. But there's chaos there. Like, who knows where it's going to land? Like, I think you want your vote through the chaos and through just proving yourself. But again, I think, like, I understand Marianne and Drea as players, and I get why they would do that. I mean, there's, like, Drea is doing this the day after taking the amulet. Like, she already did that. And, yes, she's vocalizing the 26-day game, which I think is fair. And, yes, they all want to do it for reasons. And I think that there's something really nice about the fact that it's hidden. Like, usually if you have these cross-tribe dilemmas, you have to come back, and like, as they do with Shippu Island, and, like, what did you get? Whereas, like, no one will even know this happened. So, like, it's a bit of a no-brainer. But, like, for Drea, everything I understand about her is, like, she's risking her vote, you know? Like, and it's extreme. And I just... It's going to go one of two ways for Drea. That's how I feel. And I'm leaning to, like, the big four.
Yeah, I can see that. She's playing very hard. But it's bloody fun to watch.
Yeah, it is. I mean, let's talk about Ika, because I feel like, so I, like, printed my notes, highlighting them, having some tea, like, we're about to talk, like, finishing off Zach's RHAP exit. He's talking about the challenge. It's all very chill, like, end of exit stuff. Then he, like, throws out, like, bombshells about the Ika dynamics that we see as quite different. And he is the you know, departed party, and he is someone who wasn't obviously in with the numbers, so, like, who knows. But, like, he seems to think, like, Drea was very much, like, you know, a target. Her name was out there. People were thinking about it. He was. Roxroy was. Tori was. Like, there was this divide, obviously, between Drea and Tori, possibly between, like, Drea and Roxroy, because she's throwing out Roxroy. Like, there's so much heat on Ika. There is not any relationship. I guess Romeo and Roxroy a little, but, like, there's no real relationship that stayed stable and consistent and united through even one episode of the show.
Yeah, it does, because you often see, like, two players come together and bond in a way that's clear that they would have been friends outside of this game. They're just, like, naturally bonding. Mm-hmm. I think what you're saying is we don't really see that happening between a pair of anyone in this original Ika tribe. Yeah, it does feel like they're having to force these relationships, and then therefore they don't fully trust them. I would be surprised if Drea wasn't a target for this first one. Like, she's done two things that you would arise suspicion from. So surely, like, and also we didn't get to see what she said when she came back from having been away at Shipwheel Island. But Zach mentioned it in his exit that it was this real, like, oh, we climbed the hill. There was nothing there. We climbed down, then we came back. And, like, that's so suspicious.
Yeah.
That just sounds, like, untrue.
Well, he mentioned that, like, again, they didn't believe that, so they're suspicious of her, but then they're also scared of her, so they can't vote for her. So it's, again, it's that push and pull of, like, positive, negative feelings that kind of equates to, like, well, we can't target you. But is that, a good way to play the game? Even in 26 days, that just feels like a lot to manage, like, negative and positive feelings about you. Actually, like, I guess dually negative, but in different ways, like power and fear and target and defense, like all of these things. And you're just trying to get it in a perfect balance so that people don't feel like it's too much that they can now come for you. That is so much to manage. Like, Drea's going to be, she seems like a strong woman. Like, I think she could do it, but she's going to be very tired. I was shocked that she won the fishy. I was like, Drea was doing a lot. Like, Drea was easily doing too much. Like, I can't believe for me that she, like, and now we hear her name is out there. Like, there's some good stuff there. Like, I did like how she connected with Tori. I thought that was mature and good for both of them to, like, to reconnect in that way. But for everything else, like, she should get an award for absolutely doing the most. Is the most the best? Like, is that where we're going with this?
Yeah, it is a very early time to be playing that big. I don't know. Like, the feeling when you're out there is, like, as if I'm out here. And it is balancing, like, the balance between, I guess I still don't know or fully believe that Drea put her hand up to go to Shipwheel
Island. Yeah, that's,
like,
fair.
My mind is telling me that they all paired up, they did scissors, paper, rock, and then, like, they said whoever wins the whole thing has to go there, and she was the winner of it.
No,
like,
wait, they can't have done that, because if they'd all done that, then they would have got, well, how are they, like, now we're getting into the scissors, paper, rock dynamics, then they should have had a final three. Or did they do two threes and the winner of both?
Yeah, they could have done
that. How did they get the two? That's not, I really strongly feel that the two most, like, dominant people in this tribe literally were just like, they were, like, both like, I want it, because that's exactly who they are.
It feels important to know the answer to that, because it dictates to me if Drea is playing an obviously overactive game that could really be a downfall later, or if she's just stumbled upon the amulet and then, you know, been the one who, by luck of the draw, went to Shubal Island, because that feels very different. That's a very different start to a game than someone who is actively keeping on putting their hand up to try to get advantages.
Two people put their hands up. They're two of the most aggressive players in this game. Because you can even tell when she, like, wins. That was, like, stupid analyzing the scissors, paper, rock. But you can even tell that, again, like, the fact that it's that you win scissors, paper, rock, because a lot of people wouldn't want it. Like, you would rather, you want to lose, so now you're trying to throw scissors, paper, rock. There's some interesting dynamics in this. But, like, and then I think she, like, they're, like, she, like, high-fives someone. Like, she wants to go. Like, she's not like, oh, no, my scissors, paper, rock ability dooms me again. I'm too good at this game, and now I'm getting on the boat. Like, she's like, I won. I won my birthright. I'm getting to Shubal Island. And it makes it, because if it was like Drea versus Zach, I'd be like, yeah, these two people just won a couple of rounds of scissors, paper, rock. But the fact that it was Roxroy, who honestly makes Drea look subtle. At one point, Drea had to tell him to chill. Had to tell him to chill. Do you understand how intense you're being when Drea has to tell you to take it down a notch?
I love that. So every season, you know, you're getting more and more fans playing the game because people have grown up literally with Survivor. Yet every single premiere episode, you have someone who takes the leadership role, which like doesn't work in their favor. Someone who goes away for too long by themselves, looking for an idol, pretending they're not looking for an idol. Tori. And yeah, it's just so funny that you continue to get that. People just so can't not be who they naturally are.
Yeah. I want to talk about all of them because I feel like Ika is the hot mess and I'm obsessed with it. We could start with anyone. I want to start with Tori because I felt Tori was like completely hilarious to me as well. Probably other than the 11 thing, my biggest laugh in the episode when she like the bonding over Harry Potter was so funny for me for a couple of reasons. Obviously because every millennial, so I looked it up actually, 79% of people under 30 have read or watched Harry Potter. That's an enormous amount of people. So it's good to connect over it, but it was just how hard she was pushing it. She was like, this girl knows her Harry Potter. We all know our Harry Potter. It's not a personality trait. It's literally being a millennial. Also, this line where she's like, I'm just kind of like picking up. I'm trying to be really nerdy because Harry Potter's really nerdy, not the most mainstream thing that's ever existed. I'm trying to be really nerdy because I can just tell somehow. I can just tell that that's the kind of people they are. Cut to Zach at any moment. What a read, Tori. You picked up that Zach is a nerd. Like, are you psychic? Like, how could you possibly? Just like those two things. Just, I don't know. I just killed
me. Oh, my God. And my favorite moment from Tori was the part where, like, she's come back and she's, like, called everyone out to be like, I know you all think I have an idol. I just want to clear it that I don't. Drea, you specifically, I think you told everyone. Like, this heat. And you're watching Tori being like, Tori, what are you doing? Don't do this. And then she's like, we need to talk. Pulls her aside and immediately is like, nah, just kidding. I'm not upset with you. I thought that was kind of fun to watch. Like, she was pretending to have beef with Drea so that she could get some one-on-one time with her immediately after the challenge. I thought that was kind of fun.
That is a lot of credit. Like, do you think that that's what that was?
Did you not read it that way? What did you think it was? She was actually trying to throw heat on Drea?
Yeah, I don't know, because I feel like that dynamic's really interesting to me and it doesn't even look done from the next time on. I wouldn't be surprised if it was actually kind of acrimonious in that moment. I don't know that she was fully acting. I think that's giving her a lot of grace, and maybe you're right on that. I think the conversation was really good between them. They kind of buried the hatchet. Drea's got like 1,000 other plans she needs you for, Tori, at the moment anyway. But I don't know that it went that far. Like, clearly there was, it's kind of what we spoke about on Australian Survivor with like Sophie and Sam. Like, clearly there's like actually tension there. I think that's real tension coming through, but then like well buried, and like credit to them both. But I don't think it's like, everyone thinks that we were against each other. Like, there's some real stuff there that's coming out.
Yeah. I don't know what the reality is, but I'm totally reading it as if like Tori and Drea are pretending they have like beef between each other so that they can go away and actually have a conversation. I might be totally wrong on that, but I was like, if that's what they're doing,
that would be brilliant. On you. I mean, that would do.
Although
that.
I am getting like, yeah, and pretending like they're not actually tight and like unlikely alliance sort of thing. Although I am getting like, I don't know if this is totally accurate, but I'm getting like Angelina from David vs. Goliath vibes from Tori. Oh, and I don't mean that like, in a bad way, but no, like. It just isn't like that, like, not entirely, like, reading the room correctly.
Exactly. Look, That's heavy praise to go to Angelina, but like honestly, so many moments that I laughed out loud in this episode, there's a possibility that some lack of awareness will play out in hilarious ways.
Oh, and yeah. That's like the best players to watch are the ones who lack awareness because it's so hilarious to watch.
Yeah. I mean, look, I love Harry Potter too. I'm under 30. I've seen it and I've read it and I will talk to you about it for days. But like...
I'm like, how dare they think I'm looking for an idol? I was totally looking for an idol. But how dare they think I was looking for an idol?
Tori's actually good value. Like, I was upset because I wanted Zach to stay. But no, she's good TV. And I do credit, like, you think that there's more of a connection between Drea and Tori and it's playing out. To me, I credit a big gap between them being reconciled. And I still think that if that's what it is, that's still really impressive and, like, good on them for, like, again, the maturity on that. But I want to talk about Zach because Zach, you know, has to be the one to go if it's not going to be Tori. Firstly, devastated, you know, the super fan rooting for him. Seems like such a nice guy. I was having fun with it. He also is like the first US Survivor contestant to call me out in a preseason interview and be like, he was listening to my podcast and he was transcribing my podcast. And I feel like this was not the advertising I had intended. I'm still like really grateful for the moment of you. And I love Zach. And, but like,
I'll advocate for listening to your podcast as well.
Okay.
I would say that listening to your podcast doesn't always result in you going out first because I did listen to your podcast and I won. So I would say it's a spectrum.
Thank you so much because I was like, I love the moment and I do love Zach, but this isn't the endorsement I necessarily wanted. Although I will say like a lot of it seemed physical. My friend was saying, maybe I need like a complimentary like workout video with the podcast. There's only so much I can tell you to do strategically. Like, and he said I could name it Get Buff. Great name. Maybe you should do it, Haley. I'm not going to, but like, let's do some Pilates. Like, let's do some pull-ups with Jonathan, maybe. And we transcribe the podcast because you don't get a lot of like strength in your forearms from typing, you know. So maybe I should just give at the beginning of every strategy podcast, be like, warning. These strategies may not work if you aren't a little bit like, you know, physically.
Oh, you're listening to this. Do your dips. Do a push-up.
Okay, yeah. Every single time I complain about a twist, that's 10 push-ups. Every single time I talk about a plurality vote, let's do some other form of exercise that at that point I'll have researched and will know to say as part. This is a brilliant idea. This is a brilliant, this solves the issue.
So you feel like this was really a physical vote out, do you? But like that he was taken out based on his strength.
Well, yeah. So let's talk about that. I think it was true for some. For Roxroy, who's driving that and who seems connected to Swathi and to Romeo. Yeah, I actually think that matters, which seems so unfair because from a puzzle perspective, they were super far behind. I do think there were some strategic missteps. And I think that major misstep for me would be misreading Tori. Like that, because he seems like he was really close with Tori. He was doing a lot as well, Zach. Like, so he's connected with Tori. Then they're throwing Tori under the bus. He does go back to Tori. And he's wheeling and dealing. Like, he says that Drea's coming for Tori. He kind of leaves Romeo out of that because of that connection. Like, he's very considered in that strategy. I just think that he misread the fact that Tori would blow him up. And I disagreed with Stephen on Know-It-Alls, who said it was, like, paranoia and Tori hadn't done that. For Tori to say, I hear there's a rumor, that's fine. That's not a Zach thing. But for her to say, Drea, I heard it's you, like that has to come from someone. To the point where Romeo is really like, who said that? So it's very specific.
Yes.
And even if she doesn't say his name, I believe she's thrown him out there and she's thrown him under the bus. So I think like misreading her and giving her that information that she then uses to burn him, that to me, as paired with the physical stuff, as paired with kind of some other dynamics, some other names that kind of get buried for other reasons, that to me was kind of where it went wrong.
Yeah, 100%. Like if you tell, like, you Zach, you tell Tori your name is out there, like, what's she going to do? Like, it's desperation when it's the first vote. You just don't want it to be you.
Yeah.
And clearly from Tori's perspective, who else's name is she going to put out there? Well, Zach's the one who didn't do it for the challenge.
Yeah.
And gave her ammo. Information is all she can work with right now. So, like, she doesn't have an alliance to anyone yet. She has no allegiance. They haven't voted yet. And all she has to do is make sure it's not her, so the clearest next target besides her would probably either be Zach or Drea, right? Like, considering Drea has seemed a bit suspicious with a few advantages, but like, as they have mentioned in that exit, you know, Tori probably kind of seems like she might have a nice relationship with Drea. Like, I might be reading that wrong.
Well, she's good solid. Either way, they got on the same page, as a credit to them.
Yeah. But also, like, that's the fear. Does Drea have something that she's going to use an advantage tonight? So then don't go for her. Go for a sure bet. Go for Zach. I think it just makes a lot of sense if you're Tori to try to point everything. And Tori is coming across like a very active player. She's not going to sit back and do nothing. She's pulling Drea aside. She's throwing out some information, some names. Whereas Zach did seem like he was a little bit less active than Tori was. And at this point, sometimes it's whoever's running the fastest forward that kind of can get the vote across.
There's a lot of activity on this tribe. I mean, like, I feel like even Zach, like, to actively put that target on Drea to go back to Tori, like, there's information being spilled there. But yes, like, compared to Rox, Roy, in ways, Drea and Tori, Zach's like the most subtle player who ever played. I think we can see how fast these initial dynamics crack under the pressure of the speed and the small little tribes. Like, we get the big kids and the Harry Potter alliance, you know, like Harry, Ron and Hermione as they could have been, and it didn't last. And you know what I mean, because you've read the books. Like, you know, this girl knows what I'm talking about. You know Harry Potter? You know Harry Potter? Like, you...
Oh my God, I know. Weird. Like, we should have an alliance.
No, but I've also read Harry Potter. Like, you... This is just... Haley, we need to talk about it later. But these two alliances crack to the point where, like, by the end of the episode, I do think it's like the messy dynamics, but like, by the end of the episode, Zach and Tori, who were aligned, they're completely against each other. Drea and Roxroy, apparently, like, we saw Drea throwing out Roxroy. Apparently Roxroy was throwing out Drea. Like, these cracked hard. So giving any of that information early for these really tenuous relationships can be really dangerous. And I think that's why I feel really good about Romeo in this tribe, because yes, he doesn't get his way. Mm-hmm. Yes, Zach goes and they're aligned. Also, not amazing for him that, like, it's a physical approach. Like, we're voting on strength. Although I will say, Romeo, like, every time I complain about a twist, you know what to do. Do the chin up. But I still think that he feels the most just social and mellow and connected, and like, it's a good thing that he kind of lets Zach go against these louder voices and doesn't kind of rock the boat as much, and he is connected, and he's like kind of the voice of reason when Dre is like, we're gonna go for Roxroy. He's like, well, he is the strongest and that does matter. Like, he doesn't want to go back and back and back to tribal council. He kind of needs to be carried in that, and Roxroy like won the initial challenge for them. And also, like, we're in an alliance, what are you talking about? And like, that logic to me, I was like, Romeo, you are doing some logical things in the face of a little bit of chaos right now.
Yeah, I can see from Romeo's perspective to feel like you lose Zach and then to be the second less physical person out there, then that's really scary. But yeah, the challenge that they had to win, sorry, the challenge that they lost, that sent them to tribal council, looked like ridiculously hard,
so hard
from a physical standpoint, like super hard. And they would be absolutely smashed after that. So then to have to make a decision about who to vote out, I could totally see why you don't want to take out Roxroy. Like, you don't want to be going back there constantly and reducing your chances of doing well in the end game by not even getting there or not having any of your alliances from day one there. So, yeah. And, like, from Romeo's perspective, like, to fight super hard to keep someone that the tribe is turning against on the first vote, it's a pretty scary thing to do. Like, you don't know how well your relationship with Zach is going to transpire through the rest of the game. And it looks like Romeo is also, like, good at creating relationships. So there's nothing to say that he hasn't created a good relationship with Drea and Roxroy and potentially also Swati and Tori. So, yeah, like, I was sad to see the Skinny Dudes Alliance die so quickly because I've just not seen a Skinny Dudes Alliance. And I think that's just such a cool concept. Maybe in the future we'll get one.
Well, I think in terms of the decision for Romeo on strength, and again, there's more to this because it's about, like, how vocal you want to be and, like, pushing your agenda. But, like, in terms of, and, like, he seems, like, aligned with Roxroy to the point of, like, how aligned could anyone in E could be based on some of the breaks that we've seen. But it's, like, something that Evie was thinking last season when Abraham was, like, the first to go, was Evie was someone who might get picked off based on strength. So they decided, all right, well, we're not going to go with the strength-based thing because that could be on me. Obviously, really good relationship with Tiffany. Don't want to do that. So we're going to take up Abraham, but I will be one of the last two remaining in this tribe. And they actually would have been. And they got themselves into a position where they were so central that that was true. For Romeo, he makes the different decision. He's more aligned with Roxroy. He doesn't want to go to every tribal council, but I think he would know as well that it's not pure strength-based and he's probably not on the chopping block and Tori's out in front enough and Trey's out in front enough and he's one of the only names not even mentioned, him and Swathi, I think. Mm-hmm. Well, we heard Drea in the exit, but it sounds like those two were the names not mentioned. So we can kind of go on a strength thing, hope you get to win a couple of challenges too, and even if you don't, it's not necessarily going to be you, which is a bit different to what Evie thought, that maybe they would literally be next if they went through that pathway. And then for Swathi, like, what did you think about, you know, Swathi turns here, turns on the Harry Potter Alliance, which honestly turned on itself, let's be honest, that's not Swathi's fault, but how did you feel about Swathi in this vote?
Yeah, I felt good about it. Look, I don't know if I fully buy that the alliances were just the three older versus the three younger. I'm sure that everyone's having conversations and making connections.
I'm sorry, Hayley. I'm sorry. But like three of them had read Harry
Potter. They did read Harry Potter, it's true. I really hope that later on it comes out that like Roxroy is like a mad Harry Potter fan.
How dare you leave me out of the Harry Potter alliance?
Who's to say that? Drea is 35. Like, she's totally read Harry Potter.
Everyone on the planet has read or seen Harry Potter. Every single person has every... I cannot... All right. If you're going to have an alliance with people who like Harry Potter or... like, it is... 79, I can't.
Yeah, right. These guys are too young for Harry Potter. 22, 19, too young for Harry Potter.
It's not about Harry
Potter. So I don't think that... Yeah, so we see from the edit that Swathi's like maybe turned on her alliance because Tori and Zach are the ones being targeted. Well, actually only Zach. But yeah, I don't know about that. I feel like maybe Swathi's had some nice conversations and relationships with other people as well. It's a nice, you know, she's young. So to be someone who's driving a vote young, that's tricky. I think you kind of got to earn the respect of people who are older than you in a game like this. It's really hard to come out of the gate when you're younger and try to dictate stuff. So I think that, you know, to go with the flow and to not arc up when your name is not the one being written down, great. Like, ride this first vote out and make sure it's not you and just work on your relationships.
Yeah, a lot to like about Swathi in this vote. I feel that she says anyone but me basically in that many words. Roxroy asks her what she wants. She doesn't necessarily give a name because you don't want to have to give a name. And then she's pressed on the name, so she says Zach. And that's something that Roxroy might like. It's a strength thing. She's also, like, proven herself as a workhorse. Like, she's really been trying to prove that to someone like Roxroy, who seems to really, really care about that. They seem to have a bit of, like, a mentorship or, like, paternal relationship. And even when he's, like, a little, like, snappy with her about her shoes, like, maybe in a paternal way, she, like, takes that really well, and she comes back to him with a good option. And I think that relationship, like, she's carrying a lot of that in a really positive way. So I thought that was really good. Look, the alliance cracked. That's not on her. Zach has said that they were close, and so she does lose that option. But also, her name doesn't come out. And as we're saying, like, pretty much everyone's name on this tribe did. So that's a credit to her. Mm-hmm. She gets through that first vote. Even though she did lose the puzzle, even though she could be seen as someone younger or someone who's not going to be strong or someone who's not going to help, like, she's A, proven herself, and she's B, put out, like, another shield in front of her, so to the point where she's not even a target. So, yeah, I thought that she did really, really well in this episode as well.
Yeah, and, like, at the start, it's a nice... if everyone sees you as a potential number for their majority, that's a great place to be, because then you can make your choice about where you want to go. And I see Swathi as kind of having that role. Like, you know, she'll chat to Roxroy and be like, yeah, like, you want a Zach? I want Zach. Yeah. Like, so she seems to be someone who everyone's perceiving will go with the flow. And that's a nice, yeah, I just think that's nice at the start.
Mm. I mean, from the opposite of that, Roxroy, who from the preseason seemed like he would be like the most even keeled. I think on the draft, we were like, this is just like a regular guy who wandered onto set. And then was a lot. And made so many rookie mistakes. Like, I'm glad that he's aware, like he was saying in confessional, how hard it is to adjust from, like, being the dad to being kind of, like, you know, just trying to work with these people and not kind of, like, really be domineering with them. But he got military music.
Oh, it's so tricky. Like, you just can't. Oh, to tell people what to do out there when they're all so excited to have agency to play their own game. I understand. Yes, he's used to being a dad and these are all adults. They're not his children, but you better adapt to that very quickly because it doesn't take long for people to be turned off you if you're going to be dictating everything to them and not even the vote, like dictating simply like what to do and not like rest and make the shelter and not fun for people out there who want to have a fun time. Yeah, he's got his strength there to kind of keep him safe for now. But if he's not going to be making really strong connections quickly, it can get dicey.
Well, he should be a lot more insulated than he was based on the fact that he is strong. Like, even to talk about it, like, compared to Abraham last season, like, there was still Xander there. There was still Voce, Liana. Like, these are really, really strong people. So you can kind of make that sacrifice. Whereas he's... like, there's a big disparity, it seems, in strength between him and the next person on Ika. So that alone should mean that he's not even an option. Instead, we hear his name. It's people like Romeo, and credit to that relationship, but it's people like Romeo that have to protect him. Possibly a relationship with Swathi that she probably would kind of sacrifice because she does with Zach, and it feels like maybe Rothroy is still a little abrasive even in that relationship. So it's those relationships, and some of that's a credit to him, but then it's also his strength. And that saves him. And then it's also the fact that Drea can't push it because she doesn't know she has a vote. And if she did know it, and I know that Drea would go hard on it because I know Drea, like, Zach's there who wants to do it. Zach was saying in the exit that, like, everything was kind of, like, cold and dark. When Rothroy was around, they had to work all the time. And when he went to do a confessional, it was like they got to play Survivor for 30 minutes and have fun. That's how you make people feel, you know? So Zach would be into it. Probably Tori wants to get her name off the block. She's now working with Drea. Swathi, like, is she really going to bat for Rothroy at that point? Probably not. So without Shipwheel Island, like, he might really be a target. And he's so physically strong that is crazy to me. So, like, to even have your name out there, it's and crazy. Have it really be an option when you, and in the small little tribe, the weakest of the tribes, they need you so badly and they don't want you that much. Like, ooh, just a big miss from Rothroy coming out here.
Yeah, like, in a way, he's a minority because he is strong and everyone else is not as strong. So, like, they could just band up and be like, we don't want to be taken off because we're weak and try to get rid of a strong person. But as you say, like, it's dicey. There's not...
They need him.
They need him. And we were talking earlier about how Australian Survivor and American Survivor are different in one glaring way. There's not a whole lot of, like, really strong people across the whole of the contestants, whereas you look at Australian Survivor and it's, like, everybody is, like, buff. And so that makes the dynamics different about if people choose to keep strength or not. You assume you have to keep them when there's only a few there, but they don't have to. Like, they can just get rid of their strength. But we see that Rockstory, doesn't go, which I think you're right, is insulated by the fact that he is strong.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you should be able to offer the pure advantage of your strength without separating yourself socially, even on, like, US Survivor, where it does feel like, as I said, this is kind of like a cast of dirty Harry Potter fans. No, of, like, you know, like, this is, like, a physically less strong cast. That shouldn't separate Rothroy as much. Like, that should, I think, make him more necessary, as we'll talk about with Jonathan, if he can socially hang as well. Like, then you're bringing both things. It's like, you're already physical, so you got that. And then all you need to do is just, like, make people feel good. But if you make them feel bad, then I don't know that it's a socially separating to be physical. But I think at a point, like, you might put people off so much that it's not even worth it to them to keep you when it should really be an advantage when it's so rare. Like, it's a rare commodity in this tribe or in the season to have, like, physical strength and, like, help with camp life. And he's still squandering it. Like, it's valuable, Rockstroy. Like, how are you making people feel that way?
Yeah, there is lots of... The benefit to being a strong, one of the strongest people in a tribe, like, in a season like this or any season of Survivor, is you can just kind of coast at the start. Like, you can just sit back and do nothing, and you have the beauty of doing that. Whereas someone who's weaker tends to have to play hard and play fast because they're trying to justify their place or create these strong bonds so that... Yeah, like Zach. Like, it's harder for someone like Zach at the start of a game like this. Like, we see that because Zach goes home. Like, it's really hard. Like, I think someone like Zach, when clearly he's not going to be a physical asset, so then you're like, okay, great. We're either going to have you as this incredible social asset because you've, like, got these bonds with people who want to protect you, kind of like what we see with Romeo. Or we can hope that you're going to be good at puzzles, but unfortunately Zach lost the puzzle and it's really, like, the worst position to be in.
One thing I wanted to ask before we leave this tribe, do you think Tori should have thrown a vote? Because I mean, I hope that this was a considered choice, and I think there's a lot of merit to not throwing your vote. So hopefully she made that choice rather than just, like, not thinking about it. But Shot in the Dark is a thing. Almost 17% chance that she's going home. You know, like, she's obviously the second option, that are vocally fighting a tribal council. If he pulls Shot in the Dark, they're going to a revote. Tori's going home. She throws one vote, and her vote's not numerically necessary. Then she can send home someone else.
It's a risk either way. Like, yes, if it seems like just an easy, obvious thing to do, throw a vote on someone so that you save yourself from that, like, small percent of chance that Zach does pull the save. But it's not without risk, because she puts, whose name is she putting down? Like, Drea's, like, Swathi, whoever she puts down, like, then comes back and they've got a bad taste in their mouth about her. So that's not good. And, like, she's obviously on the, like, quite low in the tribe and is now going to be trying to force her way back up through connections. And that's not a great way to start making connections with people, by being like, Soz, for putting your name down. I was okay with you going if it wasn't going to be Zach. So I think that she rolls the dice here in trying to figure out.
Well, by not rolling the dice. Well, yeah, he rolled the dice.
Basically,
yeah, her reaction to him rolling the dice.
Yeah. And it clearly worked out for her. Like, when it's going to be a unanimous vote. Yeah, I don't think it's as simple as just saying, yeah, she should have just put another name down, because that does come with consequence.
Well, it works out for her because he pulls a scroll that's not the other scroll. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a 17% chance. Like, there's a timeline. Mm-hmm. There's, like, a community style, like, actually roll the dice timeline where she has gone home on the 17%. I still think, as you're saying, like, I don't know the dynamics well enough. Is there, like, someone who can be sacrificed? Like, are you making an enemy for life in the first vote? Your first vote is the most important vote. Like, you want to connect with people, like, throwing it on someone. Scary. In saying that, you know, it makes an 83% chance of coming back to camp 100%, but that 100% is also you will come back having pissed someone off. I think it's an interesting choice. I totally get, you know, in a social game, not throwing it. But man, I'd be very scared of being first boot. Part of me would want to just make sure, because it's not something that you can mitigate. Like, if he's doing Shot in the Dark, like, that's just pure luck. There is a 17% chance of luck that will be your game. I don't know if she's had enough time to think about Shot in the Dark, like we all have, but assuming he would play it, assuming it's really obvious between them, assuming you're also, like, reading Zach that he would do that, a lot of assumptions to make about making that decision, but, like, it was probably, you know, it felt right, and 17% shot, your first boot.
I guess because we know the outcome was fine for Tori, then it's easy to say, yeah, she made the right choice. I guess if she's going to throw it somewhere, she could throw a vote on Swathi probably, because you're trying to think who won't come back with wrath towards me for doing that. And Swathi seems like a really sweet person who's probably not going to maybe hold that grudge. And it looks to me, at least, that Tori's trying to create relationships with Drea, and Drea is hooked tight with, well, we think, with Rox throwing Romeo. So I think if you're going to throw it somewhere, maybe you throw it there.
Even though they both, like, yeah. Okay, I'm going to have to stop the Harry Potter thing. But I love that. I mean, look, I credit the choice. If she had been Shot in the Dark out on a 5-person vote where her vote was numerically so meaningless, we'd be talking about, that's what I'm saying. And the fact that she wasn't, I mean, it's a 5 of 6 chance. So it's a pretty good chance. It's not just like, wow, you know, you know, on the 50-50, you won out. Like, she had a good shot. 83%, 83.333, as Voce would say, but there's some protecting against it. I just hope that she made a conscious choice on it, because I think that there's merit either way. I understand both points. And I also understand not playing your game to the fear of the 17%. Like, that to me, that's a tricky way to play, and then, like, really putting that before your relationships. But in saying that, I understand the fear of a first vote. I see both ways, but yeah, there's something interesting
she
there.
Made it through.
Yeah. So Taku, I want to talk about Jonathan with this, because we're talking about strong players and kind of the advantage you can have, or, like, I mean, look, in talking about, like, disparity of strength, Jonathan, not just with his tribe but with his whole cast, should stand out. He should not have friends, because I don't even know that they can hear him up there. You know, like, he's, like, so much bigger than any other person. He's, like, so, can he hear them through all the muscles? Can they have that conversation? I don't know. But I wanted to say, a lot of what Jonathan was doing well, I have to give some context for, because it was in the secret scenes. So there's a secret scene where Lindsay, so this is the context, because a lot of what Jonathan was doing was, like, really, really good in the secret scenes. He shone in the secret scenes. There was a secret scene where Lindsay's talking just about how much she loves him and how great he is and how much they need him and how he's like the heart of the tribe. And it was just basically a whole secret scene about how great he is. Possible.
Hello.
Vibes. We'll see. And then there was another secret scene where he catches Jackson looking for an idol. And he's like, well, I need anything that brings the target off me. Because obviously, look at Jonathan. So he goes to Marianne and Omar and tells him about it. And they kind of consolidate a three. So that gave me some glimpse into the dynamics of a tribe. I'm not super sure we'll ever go to tribal council. And that might be why we're seeing the dynamics in the secret scenes. Like Luvu had a bit of that and they never went to tribal council. But I do feel like maybe Marianne, Omar, Jonathan at the center of it, and Lindsay might be tight, and Mariah, who Jackson said he was close with, maybe she's a bit on the outs, but again, I don't think they'll ever go to tribal. But I just thought some very interesting dynamics about Taku in the secret scenes.
Yeah, I could see an Omar, Lindsay, Jonathan kind of alliance forming, and then bringing in Marianne. I could, that seems like, yeah, but we've already lost Jackson, and let's see how Mariah fits in. Oh, super interesting. I'm getting from Jonathan, I get like very Mayor of Slamtown vibes, but I feel like all the vibes I'm getting are from David vs. Goliath, and that probably just shines through as like one of my favorite seasons.
No, I see it.
But I'm totally getting that.
Yeah, I mean, they're both really, really strong guys.
But like likable, really like sweet looking dudes.
He was refreshing. Like he was such a surprise from the preseason, because I felt like he came across in the preseason to me as very hard, like very like I'm Aussie, like an Aussie 1.0 especially. I mean, like, not that Aussie has ever really changed, like maybe more in the later days, but it was more like physical challenges, strong, that's why I'm here. And you're like, I said in the draft, like I want to soften it with something social, but he comes out and I think he's very affable. He's super self-aware. A lot. He's like, this is not my game. This triangle thing, that's not for me, which was hilarious. He knows his role. He's trying to use it. He said he wants to be a provider. And that's why when we're talking about the physical stuff with Roxroy, that's the natural advantage that you can have and then take and then use, you know, like that's like, Don't let it differentiate you. Let it be like, I'm here to help. That's my role. You need me in that. And also, you want to work with me. Like, let me just make it just an all-winner thing for you. And I thought he was doing great with that. Again, a lot of it's in the secret scenes, but knocking it out of the park, really.
Yeah, like, as someone who's strong, what they need to do is be like, hey, I'm here for a connection. Like, I just want to make really nice, genuine social bonds. Beautiful. Come across as, like, not super highly intellectual or strategic, because you don't want to be threatening in that way because you are already strong, which I think Jonathan is doing quite well. Like, I would love if he comes out later and he's like, I knew it was 51 triangles from the start. I just said 11 to throw everyone off.
I could count like 51 immediately.
So, immediately, yeah. I knew. I've done this before.
Yeah.
So those bode quite well for like going far. It is really hard for a strong guy to get through a season like this when being strong is not something that you see very commonly across the board. So you think that would be a target at some point. But if you're just not coming across as strategic, lovely. And yeah, I'm great. I'm happy to hear. I want to watch that secret scene, developing a nice relationship with Lindsay, because Lindsay looks very interesting to me. I'm really getting some nice vibes from Lindsay, although we didn't see a huge amount. Like, just like even the decision at the start, like, yes, let's take the amulet, but just be careful, because this, we don't want to come across as sneaky or suspicious. Like, that's really good. Like, you want to start this game thinking, I don't want to come across as deceptive. That's like saying, I have the capacity to do it. I'm willing to, but I don't want to come across as deceptive. So it's nice to hear from someone.
I think Lindsay is great. She, again, it's the social instincts from that first decision. It's caring for Jackson, and we see her, I mean, she is a dietitian, nutritionist, so she really being like, you know, I'm going to be on you to drink water, was very nurturing. And then something so small, but I loved it. When Jackson's beginning to tell his story, the look on her face, I encourage everyone to go back and just like watch that scene. Firstly, before he said anything interesting, he's like, I applied 10 years ago. And she's like, oh my God. Like, he's just like really enthusiastic. He's like, no, he's not the story yet, Lindsay. But like that active listening, and literally look at the look on her face. She's like smiling. She's open. She's receiving him. You know what I'm saying? Like, and it was very, very little that we got of her. But I think she could do a lot. I'm actually really, really happy with my draft team right now. Like, I had Romeo.
Oh, you junior draft? Pick. Oh, great.
Yeah, and then I had Lindsay, and she surprised me. I feel like I took her, and I wasn't sure about it. I feel great about the pick. And then Omar, we didn't get a lot from Omar on this tribe, but he did get literally Erica's winner quote about the pigeon and the owl, the lamb and the lion, like same. And yeah. This is the sequel, right? This is just like the different. So I feel pretty good about that too. So I'm kind of loving my pick.
Omar's, and especially if they kind of form a nice little alliance together. I like Omar. I don't know what it is. Omar's, I think it was just the like, there's a lot. There was the like, I'm an exotic animal veterinarian. Like, what? I didn't know that was a thing. That's such a cool job. Like, you have such good stories. And I was a big fan of the like orange shirt with the bird on it he was wearing. One, because it's an Australian bird. Mm-hmm. And two, just to clear this up for all the Americans, it's an emu, not an emu. It's not an emu. It's an emu. yes, I love that shirt. It was super fun. So yeah, I'm interested to see how Omar goes. But like, I, as you say, like it could be a real risk, not risk. It's a good thing, but the Taku might not be going to a lot of tribal councils.
I don't think so. They lost a member, and they're still, for any tribe to lose a member that early with Jackson, which we'll talk about. We talked about it last season. Like that could be the death of your tribe. Like then you can't sit people out as the other tribes started doing. Like they've already made good on that by winning the first challenge by coming first in that immunity challenge, despite not being able to sit anyone out. Any other tribe, I feel like losing a strong member like Jackson seems like he would have been, could literally doom you for the rest of the pre-merge. And I think the Taku are going to rally and be fine and not go to tribal ever, which is sad because I want to see more of them. I really like them. They're going to be doomed to the secret scenes. They're not going to get any chizzy points because they're just going to be winning. And they better go to some external islands because otherwise they're going to have a lot to make up for the chizzy at the merge.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, I know winning the game and winning the chizzy is like, it's hard to choose between which is more important, sure. But well, I mean, let's see how they go. Yeah. I was thinking as well, like, you know, Lindsay's a dietitian, Omar's a veterinarian of sorts. I would call those, if I put them into a general category, I would call them, you know, kind of like their types of healthcare or like therapy kind of people. We didn't touch on the fact that Tori has hidden the fact that she's a therapist. I thought it was such an interesting thing. Are we going to touch on that later?
No. I mean, look, she said it in the preseason, and I think I was already like, don't do it. I mean, like, I couldn't have come up more strongly in podcasts being like, don't lie about your profession. Because Jackie Glazier, even as a poker player, has been like, never do it. It's not worth it. So to go from therapist to caregiver? What are your thoughts?
I think it was, so it gave me a lot of flashbacks to, in our season, we had someone who was a psychologist, or you might call a therapist, pretend to be a social worker, Georgia.
Yeah.
And I think it's a terrible idea, and I'm sure it's been outlined many times why it's a terrible idea. The first is it's based off this assumption that your career, your profession is threatening. And your assumption is probably wrong about that. Like, people don't really care what you do. I think the benefit of having any career or whatever, it doesn't matter what you do. The main benefit of that is it gives you something to talk about in the endless hours that you are out there. That is the best thing. It gives you a way for someone to connect. Like, I'm going to be digging deep into my memory to try to say, oh, I have a friend who's a veterinarian and they like talk to me about this thing. I'll just be bringing up anything so we can bond. And if you're pretending you have a different career, then you are shutting those conversations down because someone's like, oh my God, my mum had a carer and blah, blah. And you can't really give a lot of details in those conversations. So you shut them down and it's really off-putting when people are not opening up to you in conversations that you're trying to instigate. So just like a really odd choice to try to hide a career that's not that threatening. Therapists aren't threatening. I'm not going to worry that you're going to like read my mind. That's not what therapists do.
Yeah. I mean, you have to offer them that information. I would love to have a therapist out there. I mean, like literally, but also like if someone's a therapist, I'd be like, great, let's head down to the beach. You can, I've had a really rough few days. I would enjoy it. Okay. So also not just that, also Swathi said she was 20 when she was 19.
And I was unsure about if that she'd aged.
Zach said that in an ex that he was like, Swathi lied about her age. You know, I was like, oh, so I didn't get like the wrong fact on my chart. Is this?
I think that's fine. Unless like, I think it's that's okay. I think people maybe if you're a teenager, people might be a bit like, you're still in your teen.
Those are like, some very similar ages. Like those are like,
yeah,
those are basically the same age, Swathi.
Yeah, it's not a big deal to lie about it. It's a small little lie. I think better than saying you're 22 because then someone's like, what'd you do if you're 21st? And you're like,
Yeah, it wouldn't change a lot. But then you can think about it the whole time when someone's asked your birthday, you're like, all right, I'm a year out. Like, I don't know, changing your whole life in your head. You've invented a year, a whole year of your life that you've lived. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's not an important lie. But also, why do it? It's just a meaningless lie.
It's not much that there's lie in the game. Lie about your conversations. Mm. Lie about your idols. Just, yeah, you don't need to lie about who you are outside the game because it doesn't matter as much. What matters is who you are in the game.
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about the last person on Taku who I want to speak to it. And I know I have to apologize in advance because it's so corny, but I was thinking about it. And that is Marianne. And yay! I love Marianne. Coldest take. Do you love Marianne? It's literally, it's the I've read Harry Potter of Survivor Take.
Yes, it's literally.
Everyone feels that way.
No one is going to be disagreeing with you.
I hope so. I mean, like, look, I don't know. The super fan community, very into it. But I feel like for Marianne, she's all of herself in every moment. She's 1,000% of herself, and I'm obsessed with it. And she says she kind of wants to, like, represent the weirdos and, like, Marianne as a member of that club, like, for sure. But I feel like for Marianne, what I loved about it is that she will be too much for some people. For some people. For the wrong people, she will be. And I genuinely felt emotional just seeing her just be exactly who she wants to be and who she is so unapologetically. And, like, she's a few years younger than I am. And as someone, again, weirdo club, for sure. Too much for some people, I'm sure of that as well. And, like, I'm a few years older than her. And even with what should be that wisdom, I, like, often, like, need that reminder, like, it's okay to be you, it's best to be you, and, like, that's for yourself, and the people that matter will embrace it. And, like, seeing her do it reminded me of that, and I know that, it's so corny because it's literally the message to be yourself, and that's like, the thing that I'm, like, championing on this podcast, but as someone, again, who, like, I feel might not necessarily be for everyone, or might feel too much, and it's something I've heard about myself in the corners of the internet sometimes, I don't know, just getting that reminder that, like, the best person that you could be is exactly who you want to be. So corny, but, like, genuinely emotionally affected me.
Oh, wow, that's so nice. Already having that feeling from it. I just don't know how anyone couldn't love Marianne.
Yeah, that's true as well. Those people are wrong. Those people are just dead wrong.
Oh, whoever, like, come on. Like, she's so, like, joyful. Like, she's, I've rewatched the episode again and, like, every time I watch any scene with her in it, like, my cheeks hurt because I'm smiling so big. Like, she's just such a ball of energy. I think she's awesome. Like, I know that every time I turn on Survivor Now, I'm going to get an endorphin hit because Marianne is going to be on my screen. And I love it. And I was, like, playing this game with myself to try to figure out which tribe I would like to be on if I was put into this game. And it was really difficult because the big draw for me wanting to be on Taku was that if we were ever doing a challenge, I know that Marianne would be on the sideline being like, go Hayley, go Hayley, go, go Hayley, go Hayley, go.
And I'm
like,
yes. It feels so nice. Yeah.
I want that so bad. I loved her so much. From a game perspective, she cannot hide who she is. And there's no way she can do that. So she cannot hide that she is going to be incredibly likable. She's going to be a lot of energy, which, as you say, I would hope the most people find really fantastic. Might be a bit much for some when you're on an island. She's smart, right? So she'll be good with the puzzles. She seems like she's strong. She's young. So I think that it's going to be she's going to be someone that I want to be cheering for, and I'm probably going to cry if she gets voted out.
100%.
But she's going to have a few challenges in the game just because she is so infectious and you cannot hide it.
Yeah. I just feel like to see someone which I think she's about 24. Only a few years younger than me, but just, like, I don't know, that strength of character to just know yourself and to just be yourself and to want to inspire others in that. Because I feel like, I don't know, like, adolescence and life and childhood is about, like, rounding out the edges, right? Like, you are, she said she was picked on, like, you are cut down if you stand out a little bit. People might come out against you, you know, people will love it, like, we love her, but she's going to draw the most attention, and some of that will be negative just because she probably will have the most people talking about her. But to just stand up in that and to just know so young that, like, you don't need to be, like, homogenized in what can be that process of rounding out edges, you like, it's best to just wear it if you can and then just be yourself. I know, it's so sad that this is so corny and, like, it's not, it should be a cycle to me. But I genuinely was thinking about it and I watched that scene again and I, like, felt tearful. She's amazing. I'm obsessed with her.
there is like nothing more wonderful than seeing someone back themselves 100% as the person they are. And that's what you get from Mariana, as you say, at a young age. So it's super cool to watch. It's so refreshing on the screen. I'm loving Marianne.
One episode in, no matter where she ends up, I'd be shocked if she's not a returning player. Like, truly, that's how much she popped on screen. Like, this is someone who's for the franchise, I truly believe.
Yep.
So just touching on Vati, we've talked about it. I mean, a lot of this was around kind of like the puzzle and stuff. Like Jenny, we said, was great kind of in those decisions. Mike, I felt like, had a lot of good externalizing of those answers with the puzzle. Even when like Jeff asks him on the mat, like who wins this game? He's like, it's going to be the person. He doesn't, you know, like he externalizes that. I felt like Mike was great in that. And we hear a story, which was also a great story. A lot of amazing stories, but just kind of how he handled himself and how he knows he might be perceived and really pulling back on maybe like a leadership role. With some language stuff I thought was really good. Did anything else really stand out to you about Vati?
I kind of had a different feeling when Mike first answered his question and he said it's going to be, because I know that he said, I'm an all-rounded player and that's my advantage in this game. And then for when he was asked on the mat, who's going to win the game? And he said, an all-rounded player who's good at everything. I'm like, ooh.
But then he said, the one of us, he's like, the person of us who's better than, like, he said something like, that's better than me or like, that's better than the rest of us. Like, he externalized it to a degree. We might know how he feels about himself, but I think the way that he communicated it was pretty good.
Yeah, it'd be a big red flag. He's like, I'm going to win the game. It's like, great. This is the tribe where I landed when I decided where I would want to start, because I just really want to be around Lydia. She seems so fun. And like, I think she's going to have a nice relationship with some people on this tribe. I was really struck by Daniel. Mm-hmm. I thought he was very impressive in getting that shoulder popped out and then popped back in and just being quite jovial and like, I'm totally fine. Don't worry about me. Great. Like, wonderful approach. Don't like hang a sob story on yourself, although you totally could. Your shoulder just got popped out. Mm-hmm. But to really like shake that off and be like, no, it's all fine. Mm-hmm. Super impressive. And Hai, you know, Hai seems like a really logical, clear-headed player, clearly a smart person who is helping us work through the advantages and the disadvantages of the amulet, and has the amulet, and sort of comes across as quite a likable person that seems to be someone who's going to have a great ability to make connections, and he's sort of in this age range that is quite nice in the ability to kind of make connections with the people in this tribe. So yeah, I'm liking Hai a lot. I love Lydia. I think Lydia's fun, although like, let's see how long for the game Lydia is, because she's quite excitable. Yeah, that's how I'm feeling about these guys.
Yeah, it's a really fun try. We didn't get a lot from them. Chanel, for example, was quite quiet. She's like the perennial winner pick for the fandom, so I'm interested to see. Again, no one gets ruled out, no one's purple, everyone got two confessionals at least, so we kind of get a bit from everyone. But yeah, we get this pair dynamic on Vati, which is Jenny and Mike, Lydia and Hai. So that seems like just a fun time. And Chanel and Daniel. And yeah, Daniel, I think, integrating very well. I think better than a lot of people thought he would in the preseason. There was also a secret scene as well about how he was like really hiding the shoulder thing, hoping it doesn't become like a liability. You know, that they would want to vote him out for that injury. The shoulder thing was crazy. He literally did the whole challenge.
He kept going, exactly.
Why? Yeah. I was like, why aren't they stopping and helping him or taking him out of the challenge? I was like, is this the monster that if like your body breaks apart from itself in the middle of a challenge, a medic won't fix it for you? Or like that you don't like, I mean, he can't sit out. He can't be like, I can't continue because my shoulder's not in its socket. But the show should make the executive decision to be like, you know, like, you can go kicking and screaming, but you're not doing the rest of this challenge. Your shoulder is not in its socket. Like,
yeah, I wonder if it was up to Daniel to flag that, although when he ran back,
you could see that his shoulder's not, shoulder. Like, yeah, like, yeah, to flag it. What? Well, look at how his arm is hanging as if independent from his body. Like, that's not, there should be a medic being like, wait.
Let's stop this.
Like, no.
The fact that Daniel popped the shoulder out, then kept going with the challenge, and then like just casually got to pop it back in at the end. Absolute props to Daniel for like kind of just like sucking that up and keeping on going. Like, very scary thing to do, but like you're balancing that with like the fear of people wanting to evict you for being injured. So I'm glad that it all worked out for him.
There's probably some stuff on pain management in that.
I'm sure the adrenaline of that moment was like covering a lot of the pain for Daniel right there.
I could barely continue watching the challenge, let alone him running the challenge. I was like not enjoying the whole, like, and when they do it with footballers as well and they pop it back, I can't do it. I cannot. I don't like it.
It was overlay like a sound that's like, oh, on top.
Yeah, is that not how it sounds?
I'm sure it does sound like that, like quite loud.
Ugh. Okay. Well, last thing before we get to the chizzy is obviously we need to talk about what happened with Jackson. And there's been information that's come out since. So, like in the ex interviews, like with Mike, and I read the interview with Dalton that. So he let them know, I don't know if it was the day or the day and a half before, but the alternates had left that morning. So for everyone who's confused about like, well, why wasn't another option found? I don't believe there was an option to be found. Hayley, what have been your thoughts on this?
Well, that's interesting to know because my immediate thoughts were if Jackson had disclosed this information prior to the game starting, albeit pretty soon to the game starting, that you would kind of assume that they would put an alternate in instead. So it was surprising to me that Jackson was there, considering that production had been told this information at all. But knowing now that, yeah, the alternates had left Fiji already, meaning that they couldn't just come back like we have COVID. So
yeah.
That makes it a little bit more sense about why Jackson had started the game. But really complicated because, like, you would assume that's a huge risk for production to put Jackson into the game, knowing that drug lithium is quite it's a very strong drug and the side effects of coming off it can be quite severe. And you'd assume that there would have been some medical advice that would have had to be cleared even in those, like, what is it, 12 or 24 hours before starting the game. I'm sure it would have been quite a complex decision. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Look, I gave a lot of grace to production, much more than the internet seemed to. And then with the information that subsequently came out, it just kind of solidified that for me. The way that I felt about it from a production standpoint, and then we can talk about Jackson, there was a lot of like, well, production was like exploiting the situation to kind of get his admittedly incredible story about like, you know, his transition and his family. And then wanted to take him out. It had to take him out, but like they wanted him in the game just to kind of have that moment. And I never felt that this was an option, not because the show won't exploit people, which it probably will. It's more for me that I felt like the show would never do this to itself. The show hates what just happened. Like to have to medevac someone, it's such a, again, like it made me feel worse about the episode. Like it's really just like really like sad moment in the premiere. It kind of takes the energy out. They lose what I assume was what they wanted to be, a second tribal council on this vote, more intrigue, more, you know, another tribe going to tribal council. They're kind of lucky that it happened, that something like this would happen early. I mean, before the game even, but like that this kind of thing is happening early enough that it was meant to be a double boot anyway. But that's not how they want the episode to go. They don't want to have to basically medevac someone from this already very small cast. Like that throws their whole schedule out. That's not good TV. It's just really sad. So for me, I knew that production would only do this if they were left choiceless. I didn't know if there was like an alternate thing, like they didn't come out due to COVID. Now I know that they'd already left. I couldn't have imagined. And what is clear to me is that they had to put him in the game because it was starting in 2 days. It's a big operation. A lot of jobs, you know, rely on this in the season. They have to start it then. Like there are grants, there are dates, there are things that are booked out in Fiji. Like it has to happen. They can't do 17 people. What are they going to do? Two tribes, like the challenges have been made. Like everything's done. It's the day before. So they can't do 17 people. So they're like, we're going to put him in and he's a great character. We'll hope for the best. I'm sure there's a lot of conversations happening with medical teams, with legal teams. They're going to be as cautious as possible and they will pull him if they need to. Like they will, as much as they would hate that, they'll put his health before the show, but like they basically crossed their fingers, hoping for the best with literally no other option, and it didn't go probably as they'd hoped, as they as well probably kept going through with like medical and legal information. So I think they were put in a really bad position, and I think they handled it pretty much as well as they could. I can't think of anything that they should have really done differently or could have done differently, and I think that they gave it a lot of grace, and I actually will kind of go against the grain, I think, a bit there and kind of credit that.
Yeah, it's a really tough position. And from Jackson's perspective, yeah. I Like, I know what it feels like to feel like you're so close to going on the game, but then you have to go through this massive medical set of tests. And it's very time pressure. Well, I don't know what their situation was, but it can be very time pressure to get them all in quickly. And if you don't get them in, like, you know, you might lose your spot. And like, I certainly even like, I remember my doctor going through this very in-depth medical and like picking up this lump on my neck that I didn't know I had, which is probably great, you know, that they picked it up, but then them saying, well, we can't sign you off. You have to then go get an ultrasound and then you have to go get a biopsy. You have to get all these things. And like in the back of my mind, I'm like, I don't care what that lump is. Put me in the game. Like, I just want to play. I'm terrified that like, I'm going to lose my spot because of a medical reason. So it's a really tough situation. Like, obviously health comes first and the game has to put everybody's health first. But, you know, you feel like this is a once in a lifetime opportunity and you worry that if you don't do it this one time, you won't be able to do it later. I know Jackson's talked about how he had hoped that he'd been able to wean himself off the lithium earlier enough that it would be safe for him to go into the game. But things like that are quite tough to be weaned off. And I'm not a medical expert in for medications at all. But my understanding is that to actually be able to wean off and to safely continue to make sure someone is okay, you do need access to medical tests. It's not something that they could, you know, do while Jackson is in the game. And the strain that they're under, especially in season 42, where they're not getting enough food and you can't be sure they're not going to be dehydrated, but that's just really, really risky. So, of course, from a medical standpoint, they've really got to remove Jackson for safety.
Yeah, and I love getting your perspective on a player who dreamed of this and also had a similar thing where you have that year, like the dream is put on pause, even to get, obviously, to get the opportunity is incredible, and then you're waiting and it's something you want so much. And I think it's key to looking at this from Jackson's perspective, because look, I believe mistakes were made. As I said, I believe the show was put in a poor position. There was obviously a lack of transparency from Jackson. And I think that that is based on what you describe. And I think that it's a situation I can't even imagine to have like this dream. And it's something you technically should be able to control to make sure you get it. Like, you have to kind of get off this medication or your health has to be where it needs to be, or you're going to lose your dream. So I understand the optimism and I definitely want to have compassion for the desperation in that. Like, it's a really, really uncomfortable and sad situation all around that it went this way. I think I get kind of trying to like, you know, hide that transparency to a degree and backing yourself and just like really just needing this to happen. In saying that, he blames himself. And I do believe there were mistakes. And I believe the show was put in a bad position that they handled well. And I have compassion for Jackson in what is a really difficult situation. And like the clash of those things, I can see how it went poorly, basically. And I just want to have like grace for all of it, because a lot of people were really angry about the situation and the way that it happened. And for me, it was just like,
oh, it's quite jarring.
So sad. Yeah. Like, I mean, especially because it had been such a fun, light, joyous premiere, as we say. And then you get a character you're already more invested in than some people that we've spent a long time with, an Australian Survivor. You care about this person already. And now he's leaving in a way that's unlike anything we've ever seen. And I think I can understand why people jump to, well, that wasn't handled well, or like can jump to anger in that, or like in the confusion, you have like strong emotions about it. So I'm kind of trying to come in with grace for everyone and be like, for Jackson, so hard. And it's a different, difficult situation than most of us who've never played Survivor, who've never had that dream in your grasp, can understand. And for the show, logistically, like pretty much like a no-win situation. It was very, very jarring for sure. It was almost like it kind of cut the episode for me.
Yeah, it's really uncomfortable to watch, because you really are like backing Jackson and wanting Jackson to do as well as he can, and to get this chance after 10 years of wanting to play. I know the desperation and the feeling of just wanting to get out there so much that you feel like your health is your choice and you're willing to, you know, make the choices you want so that you can play. But in the end, you know, the game has a responsibility as well to make sure that you are safe. And so in some ways it's not always our choice if we play, or when we play. It just has to be that correct timing where everything lines up in that production wants you, but you also are cleared medically well enough to be able to play.
Yeah. Really unfortunate situation for pretty much everyone, I feel, that was involved in it, including the viewers. So I don't know how to segue from it, but we are going to get to the chili. You know what? Jacob Fager Weinstein and MC Khaled will segue for us, so take it away.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3.
All right, so it's time for the chili, and for all the people transcribing the podcast who were going to be on the show, this is when you do 10 sit-ups, right? So that's what we're doing with the podcast now. I'm going to give 3 points to Romeo. Again, he didn't get his way, but he's well-connected in the vote. He's not pushing against louder voices, and I just feel like I try to give to the vote tribe because they did the most strategically. They had to do the most, and to me, he came across the best in that and was at least like the voice of reason to be like, but he's in our alliance. You know, like I feel like he was dealing with a lot, and he did it well. I would give 2 points to Swathi based on her, you know, based on rallying when those initial bonds were possibly broken or when like the connections became less stable from what we saw in kind of this binary set of groups. She's the one who pushes out Zach's name. She really gets anyone but me completely done. I think she worked pretty hard not to be a target with like the way that she was physically working and that kind of like work-based mentality. And I think she's catering to and connecting with Rockroy very well. And then I'll give a point to Jenny, who again, just great in leading the triangles without making, I think, people feel put off at all. She did it really successfully, and I think everyone would have appreciated that. And I really liked her Schiphol Island decision. Danny got one in the first premiere of 41, so it only feels right that she would make the same decision for the same right reasons, and I would appreciate it to the same extent numerically for the chizzy. I'll give an honorable mention to Jonathan. I feel like a lot of that was in the secret scenes, but so I don't know, it feels weird. It wasn't on the show. He was doing freaking amazing. Like, they called him the heart of the tribe, but I don't know, like, we'll have to see how it plays out. They haven't gone to tribal. I'm not sure that they will for a very long time. And it wasn't technically on the show. So that's an honorable mention for me. Where are you giving your points, Ailey?
All right. So I know you won't agree with mine, but that's okay. I'm giving my 3 points to Drea.
What's happening? I don't get it. I don't get the fishing. Am I wrong? Like, I'm so confused.
No, there's no right and wrong. It's so early. How are we, like, do we know what to read?
That's true.
No, like, she has finished the first episode with 2 advantages.
And well, a bounty.
Season where it's, well, yes, but, you know, it has the potential. She has some mechanisms to do stuff. She has some levers to pull.
Yeah.
And, you know, she has to be a good player to make sure she can make sure that that doesn't come back on her. But, you know, like, she's come out of it with 2 advantages. It's a big deal. She could have been a target here and she wasn't. She's been a bit, to get those 2 advantages, there has to have been some suspicion. So we don't know if the reason she wasn't voted for was because of that or not. But we see her having conversations with everyone. She's got a relationship with Romeo and Roxroy. She's had a nice conversation with Tori. And she wasn't the target for the vote. I think that that puts her in a nice spot. Like, I'm giving her my 3 points for the chizzy because I enjoyed watching Drea, and I'm interested to see what happens. Let's see if she can keep her threat level low. Time will tell.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give 2 points to Tori
because she created the
Harry Potter Alliance.
Oh my gosh.
I want to give them to her because I think I'm reading, and I might be reading this all completely wrong, but she didn't get voted out. So that's kind of good. She managed to have, I think that conversation with Drea, like, it felt really big to me. Like, the way that she stepped away and like pulled Drea over and like, I don't know. That meant a lot in my reading of what's happening. And so I'm going to give that to Tori, cause let's just mix it up a little bit. Hey,
yeah.
I'm going to give my 1 point to Romeo. I really liked Romeo in this episode. I think he's clearly got a good social strategy, making some good connections with people. Unfortunately, he lost Zach, I really wanted to barrack for the Skinny Dudes Alliance. I was so excited for it. So it's sad that Romeo didn't get to keep Zach in this position, but he's not really being bandied around as a threat and his name's not out there. So I'm going to give Romeo my 1 point. I've got a little honorable mention for Daniel because I thought that was very cool, but that shoulder got popped out and popped back in and seamlessly went on with the game. They're my cheesy points.
I feel like with Drea and Tori, they both did good things. Like, I think mostly that connection with each other and like whether it, you know, it was long term, whether they were reuniting, like, that was definitely good. I just feel like for Drea, you say, yeah, she has like positive relationships. And I do think those, like, she has those connections, but then she's also like flipping on those connections. She also has like negativity in some of that. Like, again, like everything Drea, it's a lot. It's a lot of like conflicting things that you're going to feel the type of way about, the push and pull. For Tori, I think she did well to dig herself out of the hole, but she also put herself in the hole, you know? So like there's those parts. So I think sometimes the chivvy, it can reward that big gameplay. And I think that's very much true of Drea and Tori. Sometimes there's negativity in that, but then there's like positivity that you, you know, feels comes over the top of that. I feel like my points, like for Romeo in, on three, Swathi, for example, and Jenny, those were the people who were kind of like the most
long
stable. Yeah. Like that, like they were almost middling to a degree, but in a way that I thought was actually really admirable when everyone's kind of big to a point where it might be to their detriment, like to stay the course as Jenny does when other people are making decisions that are different to that, like to kind of anyone but me, like Swathi does, for Romeo to just kind of sit in the center and have connections and not have to push on it. That's where I went. So I think that's where we kind of had the disparity in our approaches.
Yeah. You know, to be fair, I find the chizzy very stressful. I think it's a lot of responsibility, and I'm still like working my way through how I want to award people, because it's this balance between like, am I awarding you for what would be like long-term gameplay that might be successful? Or am I awarding you for something that like I totally enjoy to watch? Like, I think it's kind of landing somewhere in the middle of these two things, and we'll see how it evolves over time.
For sure. Well, we have some questions from the listeners. Cameron wants to know who your winner pick is, Hayley.
Ooh, I think this will continue to change, but like right now I really like Lindsay. I'm just feeling very gravitating towards Lindsay. I think that Lindsay is sitting on a tribe right now that seems pretty good in terms of how often they're going to be going to tribal, which bodes very well in Survivor for how long you can live in this game. And, you know, Lindsay's 31. That's how old I was when I played. And I think that's a great age to play. You can really connect with lots of people. Yeah, I just am liking Lindsay. And I really like thought that was such a nice comment when she was presented with the amulet, to be like, oh gosh, I don't want to be deceptive right now. Because I think that's very important to play a game with the mentality of like, I have the capacity to blow your mind, but I'm not going to do it. And I don't want you to think I can do that. I want you to just see my smile and think that I'm going to be a number for you.
Yeah.
So I like Lindsay.
I think she's great. I think that's a really good pick. Mike Bloom asks, will dramatic singing promos carry over into US coverage as well? So for anyone that isn't listening to the Australian Survivor coverage, firstly, how dare you? Also, every week we've been doing dramatic promo. At this point, we're just singing. Like, it's not even dramatic promos. We're singing because of what Australian Survivor do with the marketing. Trying to find like a song every week. Hayley, are you gonna sing for us? You thought because you came on Global, not the Australian Survivor podcast, that you were safe from this, but like no one is safe. So are you gonna be singing for us?
Like right now, you want me to sing a song that what reflects the first episode of the premiere?
Is that 42? Too much to ask of my? If you don't want to, it's fine. I have a song that I thought for the dramatic promo.
All right, you leave me.
Well, this is a dramatic promo, right? Like, this is what it is. It's Erica. She smashes the hourglass. And then we're getting shots of 41 to 42, but, like, the comparison shots. Like, we're getting them on Schiphol Island, and now we're on Schiphol Island, and it's like, let's do the time warp again. Shot 41, 42, same thing. It's a shot in the dark. Let's do the time warp again. And then the logo comes up and it says Survivor 41, and the one turns into a two. That's the promo.
Oh my God. That's so good. I didn't realize I had to like have skills to come on here. I just had to be able to talk. Like, I do not have any singing skills. Very impressive.
I like to make
that for us now so we can see it.
Exactly. That's what it is. And it's like, 41, but no, it's actually not. It's Survivor 41, and then the tagline comes up and it says the sequel. Yeah, that's what it is.
I love that. Let's totally do that. I have the one song I feel like would be a good one that reflects this first episode for me would be like, it's the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Basically because I can't get that out of my head after Marianne said something along the lines of like, we have the bare necessities with like the biggest smile ever, which totally put the Jungle Book into my head. So thanks, Marianne. I'm now singing the Jungle Book.
I love that. Thank you. But you got to do a dramatic. You got to have them with their no rice. It's the necessity. That's what it's gonna be. That's what it, you know. You gotta put on the whispy voice.
The trouble is you have to do it like a little more like
jazz. Like when Phoebe has a cold in Friends, that's my dramatic promo voice.
I don't know if I can do it. You do it for me.
And then it's just Marianne. It's like, forget about your worries and your strife. Survivor 41, the sequel.
It's very sexy. It's the Phoebe Survivor.
I don't know. You know what? Promo voice and sexy voice are the same. That's what I can't.
It's the same thing, yeah. I feel like this is quite
really
raunchy.
Just like, you know, blowing the lid off this, you know, multiple weeks into the dramatic promos. But look, you got a singing mic, and that is what. That's what I don't know.
That's what he wanted.
I don't know why. That's what the podcast is now. Hayley, this was a lot of fun. I appreciate it. We're already talking so much about Australian Survivor. We're doing Talking Tribal. I hope everyone's checking that out for Australian Survivor. Where can people find you and all of that content that we put out there?
You can find me on Twitter. I am constantly on Twitter. And as I say, you'll get a mixture of Survivor content, but also some pain content, which is always good to get. At Hayley Leek. I'm also on Insta, share some stuff on there, which is, I don't know what that is, at Hayley Leek _, I think. That's where I'm about. I feel like follow along with me. I'm doing call outs for pain participants all the time. So that's always fun to jump onto an experiment for pain.
I think Daniel just did one. How long can you go in the with a shoulder?
Daniel, maybe I should do some sort of like case study of everyone who's had pain on Survivor. That would be fun. So get some funding to do that.
Yeah. Well, you can follow me at Shannon Gates. Subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed. Talking Tribal, available in podcast form as well. So much going on in the world of Survivor at the moment. Obviously, we're covering Australian Survivor. I just had Simon Mee on, your cast. I've got a lot of your cast faces these weeks. So we spoke about week 6. And next week, Wei and I we'll be talking about week 7 and Wei as well. So many of my guests, when I ask them to be on, they're like, but I don't have to sing, right? And I'm like, no, but you do. So I get Wei to rap Hamilton. I think that's where we're going to go.
I was going to say, Wei knows the Hamilton rap. So that would be great. Get her rapping on there. It was like the one thing we did to pass time out there.
I love that. So we also have X interviews for Australian Survivor. Next week on Survivor Global, talking about week 2 of Survivor 42, I have Harry Hills. Now, that was the podcast that Zach specifically spoke about transcribing. Harry and I are going to we're going to have to put the workout in it. But I still think that the podcast is going to be relevant. We're going to put the brawn in with the braids is what we're going to hope to do.
Okay. Yeah. Do it.
I'm really insecure now. No, Zach, you did great. We love you. It's fine. I'm glad you listen. And I take all responsibility if I need to for anything that went wrong. I've got articles on Template, doing some fun stuff with that. Top Survivor US moves, best pre-merges, like a lot of fun stuff across mostly US Survivor actually on Template. And then Memo, really enjoying doing the memos at the moment. So reach out if you want any personalized content. But Hayley, thank you so much again. We had a good time. We ended up singing. We came up with a great podcast workout idea. We debated scissors, paper, rock tournaments for what some people might say is too long. But Marianne would say, no, you debate it as long as you want. You be who you are. Thank you, Marianne. I will debate the scissors, paper, rock tournaments. I appreciate you saying that.
Oh, yes. I'm looking forward to switching on and having Marianne on my screen every week. It's going to be a fun season. It's like, it's such a great time right now because you get to like really dig into the contestants, but you have no idea what's going to happen. It's so long to go. 26 days, so not that long, but still many weeks of getting to enjoy this. Thanks for having me. It's been really fun.
It's been really fun. I think we have 26 days left for Australian Survivor. No, it's less than that, but it feels... It's like it could be as much. We've got a lot of Survivor going on, a lot more to go. Thank you to everyone for following along. Thank you, Hayley, again for joining me on the week 1 recap. Thank you to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes, and we will see you for week 2 with Harry next week. And do 10 push-ups. Bye.
Ooh, bye.
Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor.
21 South Africans,
12 ordinary Australians,
16 New Zealanders,
20
middle, give them the swap.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Rubli.
Tribe spoke.
Shiva Tribe.
From the adventure of a lifetime.
Adventure of a lifetime.